Hello in TV land.
In audio land. We're in radio land as well. And that's actually where the primary of our podcast is actually listened to.
But well, I thought we were live right now.
Watch us live.
We're live now.
With video.
They're right? Better.
Are we live today or tomorrow? Is this next? Are we live next today?
Are we in the future?
Hey, let me turn on the volume of the stream, and then you can tell if you're in the future or the past.
Welcome to Crippled System, episode 170.
170.
I am Jeremy, Valiant Forward in the Forums. And I play Rhett.
Oh, I thought I didn't realize you were continuing.
I can keep going if you want. Usually those are the three things we mention.
I didn't remember mentioning faction for like a year.
I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't keep track of which intros we do when.
Man, where'd you get all this white shit?
I know, I'm
on the
covered in shit from your dog. I'm covered in your dog's hair on my black t-shirt. It looks terrible.
I'm Nathan, and I own a white German Shepherd.
That's true. And I rode in Nathan's car.
Yeah. Oh, so I bought a thing to clean out the back seat yesterday, and that's in the house. Oh. I didn't use it.
Yet.
Nope. I will now.
He's using me as a thing to clean his car.
Yeah, you got a lot of it.
I know.
You rode in the back seat.
I did. I was not
My
aware.
Name is Brian. I do things.
Are you play War Machine?
I play War Machine.
What faction?
He plays Hordes.
I play Hordes.
He does
play Hordes. Hordes Machine.
He does.
Not War Machine. Hordes Machine. I play the horse. Scorn.
Blackjack and hookers?
Yeah.
We're so high energy today.
I'm not high energy. I went to the state fair yesterday. Woo!
I still have to intro myself. You guys are just skipping me. You guys are jumping ahead.
We're getting to you. We've had little asides after each person, and now that was his aside, and then we'll go to you.
Oh, and then we'll go to another tangent.
No, we'll just end the podcast.
Oh, okay. I'll hold off my intro to the end then.
It's all be one big aside.
It usually is.
I'm Andy, and I play mercenaries.
So I could talk about my bed event, how buying a bed's a pain, but I'm pretty sure it's the most boring conversation because I want to kill myself every time I talk about it.
Did you actually wind up buying one?
No, I went to 5 furniture stores. And by the way, when you go to 5 furniture stores in a day, you want to kill yourself. I didn't buy anything, but I'm going to try to get something online instead. I found amazing beds for $2,500.
Okay.
But there's so many good mattress companies, at least via reviews and comments online, that they say that I can get the same quality bed for like under $1,000. Now, part of my brain's like, that can't possibly be true.
It seems weird.
But the return policy is so easy and generous that I think I'm going to try getting an $800 bed online.
And see how it is.
And now that I've slept on 1,000 beds in the last day, I can really get a good comparison. And if I spend $800 instead of $2,500, that's pretty good for me.
You actually slept on the beds?
They just passed out there.
They knocked you out. And like,
by the fifth furniture store, he just couldn't help himself.
I walked in and just like passed out. So it'll be an adventure to try these online name brand things out. But it's horrible. Don't buy it. And every salesperson took me. Oh, I will say
the queen size ghost bed is only like $700.
I know.
For the last 6 months, I have been doing this research you're just starting, and I'm telling you flat out that I ended up with use the $50 code and order a ghost bed is what I'm going to do.
I've heard good things about that, and I've also heard good things about – I haven't actually heard of Ghost, but I have heard about Casper.
And Ghost Bed is just a cheaper, better Casper.
Mm-hmm. And I've read a lot of things on all those name brands. I am 80% confident I'm going to get a ghost bed, but I'm still going to do a little more reading just because that's how I am. But I'm pretty confident that even it's also a thing on if you sleep on your side, if you sleep on your back, the different lightness firmness. And I think Ghost Bed was also rated high for sleeping on your side, which is kind of the tiebreaker. I will say, so I went to 5 stores, and by the way, to Lupus Furnace Wrist.
It might be Pip.
I'm gonna tell a guy.
And it does say Pip.
Oh, what? It's Pip?
Next, we're here.
Oh, it's Pip. Yeah. The answer is to his question online is yes. It's a secret question, but the answer is yes.
Only available to those who are watching us live.
Only available to those answering us live.
Or after I post it on YouTube.
Two things interesting to me. One, every single salesperson I have to respect, they all took me the most expensive bed first. And I have to, as a former salesman, that's how you do it.
Yep.
You start high because then you gauge their reaction of panic or horror. and I didn't, so I stayed in the nicer range. Because I was willing to drop a ton of money. I mean, I've been saving for... beds, shoes, and car, and tires. I have a coworker who taught me this. The thing that touched the ground or you touching the back, that's important. Don't skip on tires or shoes or beds.
Interesting.
That's important. Those are just important key elements in the world.
Those are where I always buy the cheapest, by the way.
Yeah, see, probably. Yeah. And the second thing was interesting. Of the 5 stores, I narrowed it down to 2 stores if I buy and if the online bed experiment fails.
Sure.
If I buy online, I narrowed down to 2 stores just based off of salespeople because everything was so equal.
Yeah.
That I'm like, I had no other – quality of beds didn't matter. But I had to narrow down to something. And I'm like, I'll use a salesperson as mine, as being a salesperson, maybe in my mind. In one store, in Steinhoffel's, As soon as the guy realized I wasn't going to buy it today, he gave me his card, and I swear to God, he sprinted away from me. He like just bolted as fast as he could to get out of my line of sight as soon as he realized I wasn't going to spend money. And like, and the lady at Ashley was amazing. So I don't know. But anyway, that's my bed story. Just don't buy a bed. You know, if you do buy a bed, just buy it blind and say whatever. Just fuck it, because it's so much. I spent 5 or 6 hours doing online research. I spent half of Saturday just going from furniture store, dealing with very aggressive salesmen, which it's their job. I'm not offended by it. It's just, you know, it's still an enduring process to deal.
You have such a different experience with this than Katie did. Because Katie did the same. So part of when Brian decided that he was going to actually, because he's been talking about buying a bed for God, since I met him.
Yeah. It's finally happening.
And we went and stayed in a hotel together at Gen Con. And we both, at the same time, after a long drive to Gen Con, and then we caught Pokemon all evening, we went to lay down in the bed. And Brian went, oh my God, this is the best bed I've ever laid in. And I went, oh my God, this bed's terrible. I don't think I can sleep in it. And Brian was like, man, I need to buy a new bed.
That was pretty much. And then I woke up after day being home. My back's hurt all week. So I'm like, I'm buying a bed Monday or Tuesday. I'm going to go online. I'm going to order a bed. And of course, that bed's bad. I have to keep it for a month before I return it. And return policy for these online companies is crazy. You literally call them, you say you're returning it, and you donate it to a charity in your town, and they just get the receipt and they give you your money back.
Huh. So they don't want it.
They don't want
it. You could have lice and shit.
It's better for them, for the donation for them to get the payoff or whatever.
Interesting.
And it's a confidence thing, because they must only get a few returns. Because some of these companies, some of them are very new. Like On Purple has only been around for like a year. Mm-hmm. But like Ghost Beds made by another manufacturer has been around like for 7 or 8 years. So they're actually a more established.
Because if you buy a bed here in town, you get a 1 month return policy. They make you put like basically saran wrap on the thing.
Correct.
And then they just take it back
to the store.
They just come get it again. Correct. They're just like, okay, we'll take it back.
Exactly. So it's an interesting process.
And then resell it. Yeah, and then they resell it.
There's a typo. He meant to say looking good, Nate, but the N and the M are right next to each other. But I appreciate that he thinks I'm looking good. Thank you.
Thanks, Pip. I should just wear Brian Kerr usually sits, and then I'll be like, oh, Brian Kerr lost weight.
That's true.
And his beard. And all his tattoos.
And all his tattoos.
And his forked penis.
I got cancer and tattoos fell off.
His tongue's no longer split.
That'd be kind of an amazing recovery. It would be. Just anyway, I just had a rant about I've spent so much time looking at bed. This is the worst. And I know someone else out there is suffering. Well, I'm glad you had put some time into it.
Yeah, it started because I saw the commercial for Purple.
Yeah.
And that Goldilocks chick is hot.
Yeah.
And so I looked around to see if I could find out who she was. And then I accidentally started researching the bed, too.
Yeah.
And then it spread from there. And so now I'm going to buy a new bed also.
You should watch a video of how these online beds expand, because they come wrapped up really tight and you open them and they explode out. It's pretty amazing.
The king size beds are like in a box that are the size of one of us. It's just like this thing. And then, because of how the foam compresses.
Hmm. Interesting.
It's amusing. If you want to watch a foam compress, it's pretty amazing. I mean, a scale of, you know, what you're doing for the day.
It would be more entertaining if part of the return policy is for you to get it back in that size.
Well, that's why I called. That's why I was like, man, how the fuck would I get this back? And then I called one place. Like, we'll just give it to charity. Like, that seems suspect. So I called a few more, and that's what they all do. I'm like, well, I guess that's
just the thing.
Yeah.
You'd almost want to basically have everyone get a bed.
Some guy and got. Then, I this, one guy's a guy. I bought four beds. Kept one of them. Another three with the charity. I mean, if you have like upfront cash to do that, you know,
you buy all four. You put them in different rooms of your house. You sleep in each of them for a night, and you're like, oh, I like this one best.
And I'm going from a coil to. I'm going to go from a coil God. To a. Oh,
my back hurts just thinking about that.
And even transitioning, it takes a few. I know the first few days, like I have to ignore. However, if I don't feel
the weird. The weird thing for me. So Katie had a foam bed that she got when we were dating, and so when we got married, I went from my super shitty spring bed to that. And the hard part for me was actually the temperature.
Yeah,
it's weird. So
the newer beds have layers of cool foam on top of them now, but they used to be
hot. No, it wasn't too hot. It was too cold.
That's the first time I've heard that.
Like for a foam bed, if it's correctly on the thing and it's a correct technology, whatever, like it lets the cool air up through the my old mattress did not, because it was probably full of dead bugs and whatever from being around for a decade. But like I laid on the thing, and I usually sleep like without a blanket or a sheet most of the time during the summer because I get really warm. And I tried to sleep on that thing, and I just woke up like freezing to death like partway through the night. I was like, oh, I guess I need a blanket.
See, I sleep on a burlap sack full of reeds and dead possums.
How's that working out for you?
You're pretty good.
All right, well, you know, if it works for you.
Yeah. Just use a good possum time. As a pillow.
Live like, or dead, really, either
just
way.
Work it up towards the top.
He's playing dead.
Ah, okay.
I love that they had William Shatner play the possum in Over the Hedge. Because the whole premise is that he overacts when playing dead, and it's great. That was a shockingly good movie.
Out of all the odd, not Disney animated films,
the DreamWorks
films especially.
Is that the one with the rocket?
They build a rocket. Yeah. They accidentally make a rocket out of the like the barbecue.
I love that. That whole over the head. Just a that scene's amazing. And that Shatner's great in that.
Yeah,
movie.
Shatner's great. That scene's amazing. Like the squirrel, the Steve Carell squirrel, and he like drinks an espresso and time stops.
Was it
a Red Bull? It was something super highly caffeinated.
They gave him an energy drink.
And time literally stops.
Yeah, it looks like the scene with Quicksilver.
Yeah, that might be my favorite DreamWorks film. I'd have to double check if they have any other surprisingly good movies that I'm forgetting. But
who did the one that came out earlier this year?
That's helpful.
The Madagascar stuff is them, and all the like. It's either them or the people who did all
Zootopia.
Of the that's Disney.
Okay,
that's Disney. Yeah.
The Life of Pets
not Pixar,
thing, that's DreamWorks as well.
Which is, Life of Pets, yeah.
Life of Pets is
Life of Pets DreamWorks. Was not as good. Life of Pets was actually a kid's movie written for kids as opposed to a kid's movie written for adults. And so it was okay, but it was not nearly as good for, me.
We were speaking of movies, and I forgot to tell John this or give it back. I finally finished Cowboy Bebop last night.
Oh, did you like it?
It was okay. I wasn't sure what to expect. I knew everyone said it's the greatest thing ever. So I'm like, I just watched it.
Greatest anime ever. Yeah. And you're not an anime guy in general.
Yeah, so. But it was enjoyable. I mean, I didn't move me anyway, but the character was compelling and I enjoyed the story.
The ending didn't move you.
Come on.
It was a little sad. The end, you're like, oh, man.
And I've never seen the Spirited Away movie, and I keep hearing.
You've never seen Have you seen any of Miyazuki's, like the ones that he's famous for?
No idea.
We should watch Princess Mononoke.
Miyazuki.
Whatever.
My Kazuki.
No. My Kazuki. Is it a Weird Al song? It sounds like a Weird Al song.
It does.
Because Spirited Away is very Alice in Wonderland, where it's just like a girl interacting with a bunch of weird shit, and then the movie ends.
I don't enjoy that one as much. That's my least favorite of the
Spirited
three.
Spirited Away?
Spirited Away.
Of the three?
Because isn't that one they always mention Spirited Away, Howl's Moving Castle, and there's a third one they always mention.
So there's like 20 Miyazaki films,
right,
and they're all amazing. But the top, I guess a lot of people talk about Howl's Moving Castle, but to me, the big two that you can debate being his best are either going to be Spirited Away or Princess Mononoke.
Okay.
And Princess Mononoke might be one of my top five films of all... No, that's a lie. It's for sure one of my top five films of all time. I absolutely love Princess Mononoke.
Okay. I've definitely seen both. I'm forgetting. Spirited Away is the one with the girl that has the, dragon ghost thing that follows her around.
Yeah. Well, I mean, doesn't follow around in general, but for part of the film. Yeah, the dragon ghost thing. It's
okay. I like that one less. I like the other one better. I like Princess Mononoke better than Spirited Away.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed Howl's Moving Castle. I think that's actually really good.
I like they're all their own thing. Like, Ponyo is just a fun kids movie with, hooray. It's like Little Mermaid, but more adorable.
She's the one that rides the witch that's the delivery service girl?
No, that's Kiki's Delivery Service.
Kiki's Delivery Service. I like that one a lot.
Ponyo is the fish who wants to be a person.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And then you have Nausicaa of the Valley of the Wind. You got Porco Rosso.
Are any of these as good as High School of the Dead? That's my bar for all anime.
None of them are as delightfully terrible as High School of the Dead.
This is an important question. Dubbed or subbed? Generally speaking, I prefer subtitles, but the dubbing they did for Howl's Moving Castle is part of why I like it so much.
Miyazaki gets really good dubbing.
Yeah, his dubbing's amazing.
His dubbing is really well done. Interestingly enough, Princess Mononoke has one of the only films I know of where the gender of a main character switches. Because one of the characters in Princess Mononoke is male in the Japanese version, and then in the American version, she's dubbed over by... Dana Scully, what's her name?
I don't remember her actual name, but Dana Scully.
What's her name?
Jillian Anderson.
So the character changes from male to female. You can jump at any time. It's not our fault, you're uncultured swine. These movies are great.
They are fantastic.
I liked Wreck-It
Ralph. Some are comedies, some are action, some are dramas, some are romances, some are kids' movies. Miyazaki runs the gamut, and that's what's so good about him.
Are any of these like Legend of the Overfiend?
Oh, My Neighbor Totoro is the other one people talk about all the time.
That's the other one people talk about.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right. And that's more like a Winnie the Pooh, just,
that
people adventure.
That one's kind of goofy, but it's fun.
Yeah, that's just a kid's movie, goofy fun. No, Prince of Mononoke is a fucking masterpiece.
Yeah, I would agree.
Let's go watch it.
I'd rather watch Kiki's Delivery Service, more what I'm in the mood for right now.
I don't think you've seen Princess Mononoke.
I think I have.
Okay.
I don't know what just happened.
the Iron Town on the mountain, and there's the forest outside of it.
Announcements!
That they chopped down.
Yeah,
fucking masterpiece.
It's a great movie.
Announcements. Announcements.
Tournament next week.
Tournament in Madison, Wisconsin next weekend at Pegasus Games, 75.2 list.
Is that Rick's tournament?
Rick's tournament.
This coming weekend.
This coming Saturday, the 20th.
Saturday.
It should be a good turnout. We have people from Chicago coming, Milwaukee coming. Me and Jeremy sadly won't be there because of our friend JR. You son of a bitch,
you
JR.
Son of a bitch, JR.
I work. Well, JR could come.
JR's bringing his wife.
Yeah.
And?
We're going to go get corn instead.
So he's coming up for the weekend, his wife and him, to hang out with at least Katie and I, since they're staying in our house. And both Katie and Megan would possibly let us live, but both make JR and I suffer if we went to the tournament.
Yeah.
Which is too bad, because JR has gotten back into War Machine since Mark III hit. Yeah. He's actually enjoying it. He is dropping Cricks, and he's going to probably pick up. He had told me, but now I forget. I think he's at Circle. Because he was just like, he played Cricks at the WITC, and like he was like already on the fence from having like played 20 or 30 games of Mark III and tried to practice it in casual and whatever. And then at the WITC, he just literally got it beat out of him. He was like, yep, nope, this is bad.
Well, I think that if you only play two or three of the Cricks casters, you can still do well. But the faction got lambasted so hard. We had two Cricks players
at WITC. And so him and the real problem was that him and Green had to split the Cricks stable, and then it was just terrible for both of them. Like, they just had no answers for anything. Because there are about three good casters in Cricks, and there are not four that paired well, that they could figure out.
Oh, sure, sure.
Well, the
team can't duplicate casters.
Oh, okay, that's what threw me off. Okay,
that was the problem.
Our team had no communication with that.
In normal life, that won't happen.
Correct.
So in normal life, you bring Denny one and...
Mm-hmm. Venithrax.
Yeah, for anti-hordes, maybe Venithrax. Yeah. Witch Coven is still good. But, I mean, you bring Denny one and one of your other decent casters.
Correct.
And then just one list Denny won the whole time.
Yeah, and that's just not... He's not interested in having an... Because one of the things he always liked about Cricks, other than the fact that they were broken as shit and amazingly powerful, was the deep stable of casters, and he could try different stuff while staying in a single faction. And Cricks just isn't that way right now.
I love that that's where minions are at.
Yeah,
100%. I have 10 amazing casters.
Yeah. And I mean, a lot of factions
suck at Cricks players.
I think most factions have a lot of playable casters right now, and Cricks is really in the minority that they don't.
Yeah. We had a couple Cricks players at the tournament I was at yesterday. So, I mean, how'd they do? Well, I know one had Denny won. I didn't play any of them, I didn't have an answer for that. I played Trolls, and then Kador, and then Trolls. That's what I faced. So,
boom. You played Felix, right?
I played Felix.
He made it to the final round, didn't he?
He was in the final round.
Wow, good for him.
Magic won. Are we going into...
You lost to Felix. What's wrong with you?
Any more announcements? So we have a tournament next week.
Game Hold Con.
War Machine Weekend.
War Machine Weekend. Tickets went on sale.
Yeah, tickets went on sale. I bought my ticket yesterday.
The same weekend again this year?
Yeah, same weekend. So we're going to War Machine Weekend for Game Hold Con. Sorry.
I'm going to Game Hold Con. Yeah. I'm not going to make it down to War Machine Weekend.
What?
You're going to War Machine Weekend.
I don't have pass or a room or anything.
Go get those things.
You're going to War Machine Weekend. There's no choice in the matter. You don't have an option. There's no choice. You're going to War Machine Weekend.
Hey, do you want to be my helper for the painting lounge all weekend?
Maybe. Get a free room, Mega Boom. Here, call me.
All right, I guess I'm going to War Machine Weekend.
There's no other choice. I'm sorry, Rick and locals, but unless you can't go to, unless you like your life is like locked down, or you're having a baby, there is no reason not to go to War Machine Weekend. It's the best con there is
all year.
I will say,
we're all going to War Machine Weekend. Bye-bye.
I will say this only for someone's benefit. Listens, the one thing that War Machine Weekend doesn't do as well is Iron Arena is not as well as War Machine Weekend. They do sprints all weekend, but like, if you go there and you want to, like, at 9 a.m. on Thursday or on Friday start playing Iron Arena, they're not set up for that. It's more about the tournaments and the socialization and the scores.
Well, they really, for the casual player, they push the scrambles because for them, and I actually happen to agree, if you're going to go there and play as a casual player, the idea of a scramble is actually a lot more fun to me than sitting in Iron Arena. And then, especially at, like, the bigger events where turning in your games takes forever, like...
Yeah.
Although the scrambles, by the way, people don't pull punches there. I did a scramble last year, and I'm like, oh, I'll just do a wacky, goofy list. And then people are just dropping, like, you know, high-level net deck tournament-level shit. And I'm like, oh, okay, just because it's only a four-person tournament doesn't mean you're not pulling punches.
You can get your eight friends, and you have eight friends.
That's what I did. I literally, last year, was like, let's do a scramble. And it did not go terribly well for me because it was like me, Tom Guan, Craig, whatever his name is, Keith Christensen, I forget who the other guys were, but suffice it to say, everyone there qualifies for Masters or Iron Gauntlet every year except me.
I beat Keith my last two games, and those were with pigs.
He's a has-been. I've been with
Scrum. To be fair, his most recent game, he was playing Gatsby 3, and I did not think I'd ever say that, but that meant that he was throwing the game, because Gatsby 3 is the worst caster in the game right now.
Gatsby 2.
He was playing Gatsby 2, which is basically throwing the game.
Yeah, he is kind of unplayable.
Hey, but the game before that was Haley 2, and I fucking beat him with pigs, and I'm going to keep
Arcadius?
No, Helga.
Helga?
Yeah. I beat him. I was able to score on my turn and block him out from getting to the zone, so I scored two. No. It was he let me score on top on bottom of two.
Ooh.
And then so I scored 1 point on three. And the point is, I was up two, and then he was beating me on attrition, but sure. I feeded and slammed him away from all three incursion flags and scored all three flags in a turn.
You can do that?
Yeah. They're each control one, dominate one.
Yeah.
So I just slammed him away from all three flags and went score, score, score. Go to five. Suck a dick,
your team has a lot of solos. That list?
No.
Surprised you were able to control all three?
Three remaining slaughterhousers on one flag, Helga on the middle one, and then a beast over on, or some solo. Like, yeah.
That's fair.
Did someone have a... I had a topic unless someone had something else to add.
Well, I was just going to go quickly over tournament yesterday.
Yeah, go over the tournament.
I did go 2-1 for the full day. Okay. I did lose against Felix first round. The reason why I lost against Felix he's first round... Yeah, he's...
You son of a bitch, Felix.
How dare he be such a pleasant person?
He took Matt Ragnar. He had Ragnar and Madrek one was his pairing. My pairing for the day
was that a typo when you wrote on the list that it wasn't Madrek 2?
No. Actually, both troll players did not have Madrek 2, which threw me off.
Yeah. Right?
But so then I decided, I'm going to...
One intersection. One thing back. The thing that drives me about that not playing Magic 2 is if the troll players are smart.
They're smart.
They know if they don't take Magic 2 to a major tournament for the next 3 months,
then
when
the
first errata hits, he won't be errata because he didn't win anything major because no one's playing him, and then boom, fuck you world and Magic 2 all day.
Anyway, flip side, I know some troll players that aren't taking Magic 2 because they don't want to learn how to play him and fall in love with him and then have him be nerfed into oblivion.
Sorry, continue.
So I took Ragnar. My list choices for the day were Exelon Thexis, my wonderful spam list, and Durgan one.
Sure. Earthbreaker
stuff. With Earthbreaker things. And stuff. So I ended up taking Exelon Thexis. Fucking Mountain Kings under Ragnar's feet.
What is Ragnar's feet?
Ragnar's feet is one less die to damage.
Oh.
To models in his control.
Wow.
It is brutal. And I forgot that the Mountain King also has Bulldoze now.
Does he really?
He has Bulldoze now. Huh. Both Mountain King, Glacier King, both have Bulldoze.
He had both in the list?
Just the Mountain King. Okay. I was able to handle most of his list. What I ended up having to do is I had to give him a kill box to prevent the Mountain King from just walking up and killing Exelon Thexis. That brought him up to... 3 points at that point.
That seems bad.
And then all he had to do then was clear out the zone. And what I should have did that turn is he didn't have that many troops left. He had Ragnar, Mountain King, and like a couple of random guys. If I would have just unleashed everything I could into the zone, he would not have been able to dominate it then, in which then I could have sent a wrecker in to kill off Ragnar. Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting.
So I lost a scenario in that one. Second round, took on Austin, I believe his name was, playing...
Brian Austin Green?
No, it's not Brian Austin Green.
Sean Astin?
No. Shut up. Damn it. No, so it was Harkovich. It was either Harkovich or Source of One. I decided I was going to drop Durgan into it, thinking that he might actually take Source of One. Which, realizing that's not, he's not going to do that. So he took Harkovich. Turns out, again, my Earthbreaker list can actually handle Jack Spam fairly decent. Sure, yes, you'll be able to get power up a lot, but I will knock the fuck down of all your Jacks, and I will also maybe stationary one of them.
I thought Hamkovich had a jumpstart. They just all stand back up.
He does have jumpstart. You know what prevents jumpstart?
What?
Getting hit with Iris.
Ah, yes.
And then I hit him with Iris again.
Ooh.
For a second time.
Yeah, that's bad.
How does Harkovich have a ton of shield guards?
I don't know. He didn't. This is the first time I ever learned of a scenario piece actually being very pivotal in the game. So he put Harkovich behind the scenario piece, or his objective.
Sure.
Which was stockpile.
Sure.
And then just parked a jack in front of Harkovich so he could not be knocked down.
Sure.
And then had a couple other jacks nearby. The only way I could do this was either to destroy the Spriggan, which is kind of hard to do, or shoot the objective and destroy that.
But that's a Spriggan.
But like, that's a Spriggan next to it, yeah, which it could just shield guard it to whatever jack that's nearby.
Stockpile's a real survivable piece.
It completely changed the game. Basically went from where I thought I had the game pretty much flat out to, oh, shit, I don't think I can do this.
And Stockpile's any attack that would hit?
Any range.
It gets infinite suckers. Okay. Get infinite suckers just to jacks and beasts, and then at the start of your turn, every jack and beast base to base with it heals D3.
Okay.
So it shunts off to them, and then it heals them afterwards.
Wow. Yeah, that's pretty good.
Yeah, it was pretty amazing. It turned out, near the end of that match, Harkovich had to basically get away from there because I was about to kill the Spriggan, which then I proceeded to... He left that angle open so I could kill him.
Okay.
Last match was against Madrak 1. I took my excellent Thexus list against that and parted the seas and killed Madrak. My last round opponent, I cannot remember his name. I apologize if you end up listening to this.
Call him Frank.
I want to say it was Mike or something like that. But anyway, he left one side open. I originally set up my Mindbenders over on the left side, thinking he was going to put something over on the left side so I can actually ambush on that side. But he left Horgul Iron Strike way too close to the right side. So I ended up having to move Exelon Thexus over, TK a bunch of my Drudge Mindbenders up so I can Adrenal Flood the ambushing unit. And then I had three ambushing Adrenal Flooded slaves kill off Horgul. It was not good for Horgul Iron Strike.
No.
Poor Horgul.
Yep.
Poor guy.
Horgul Borgul.
But yeah, so went 2-1.
And I think Jordan lost, our Jordan lost to Felix as well, because he could also, under the feet, could not kill Mutant King.
Yes, yeah. Even with Harkovich, I think he took Harkovich into it too, so it was all jacks. The Mutant King is, that thing is...
And if you try to kill it under that feet, it's just going to heal everything, because it's going to shed 100 whelps.
Yep. Yep, you're going to be doing a ton of less damage.
You just have to give up. You just have to not even try to attack that thing.
Yep, with the Mountain King, you basically just have to, you have to one round it pretty much. Otherwise,
but with the Ragnarok's feet, you're not going to.
No.
But right, I mean, so when he feats, you just have to not even try. You can't do half its health and work again next turn or anything. No. You just have to go, okay, your feat says you may not target the Mountain King with attacks.
Gotcha. Unless you have something that you can go into it heavy and then you have some kind of follow-up, like I was doing with my...
I guess you just peg it with Alton Ashley.
Yeah, I was going to say, you shoot with Alton Ashley.
Shoot with Alton Ashley and go fuck yourself, Mountain King.
Yeah.
I mean, that's one thing. The other one was to... send in some overlords to spray up all the whelps.
Sure.
That would work too.
That's about the only other way that you can really deal with the Mountain King under his feet.
Ta-da!
But yeah, I did well. I feel bad about not remembering my last point.
It was Mikey Frank.
Yeah, Mikey Frank.
Yeah. Damn it. You had a topic?
Oh, yeah, topic. I mentioned this on our forum a while ago. Losing game. It's about losing and why you're a loser if you lose. But how what you learn from a loss and how people react to loss. Okay. I know people that technically have never lost a game. Because when the game is over, like they've never been defeated by their opponent.
Yes. Correct.
As soon as the game is over, like, well, I only lost because I did this, or I only lost because the dice did this. And, they've never just been outplayed. Like, in no point in the world did their opponents just do something good or smart. It was just they always made the mistakes.
And I struggle with that. I struggle with that sometimes. I get really salty about dice right afterwards sometimes. Correct. It's hard.
I never complain about dice.
Never once.
And I think sometimes someone...
Yeah.
And I mean, considering this is a dice game, you're always going to technically lose because of dice. I mean, dice are there to do that, but it's like, someone's like, well, man, that guy got, a boxcar. It's like, well, did you put your caster in a spot that let him roll those dice? Like, if you would have played smarter and stayed back, or did your opponent be clever and do something, did he create the scenario to roll dice?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, if you can, if you play smarter and you deny dice being rolled, then you can't be diced. Sure. Or if your opponent's clever, does something you didn't expect, So there's all these other elements. I just find it amazing. I think people that don't analyze their losses better grow slower in the game. I think people need to kind of stop.
Because you're not going to improve your play if you don't admit that there's plays that you could have, like, if you don't see things you could have done better, you don't do those better things.
And if you don't acknowledge, okay, that person played better, so how do I take my game up to so I don't let that person, outmaneuver me, kind of a thing. Like, how do I improve?
And like, one of the things that I've always tracked my games and taken notes just in an Excel document, but But something this year that I started doing with Mark III, and I know Brian finds the thread boring, and you guys probably do too, but I write like really detailed battle reports for all my Mark III games that I've played so far. And I go in, and and as I'm writing it, I'll remember things about the match, and I'm like, well, this was really dumb of me, or this was like a moment of random brilliance that I should try to recreate in the future. And like, I didn't realize how much of a difference it was making. And then the other day, I managed to play the same match that I had played weeks earlier. I played against Kara Sloan with Helena, and Keith destroyed me because I didn't understand the matchup. It was my first game with Helena. It was my first game against Kara Sloan. There were a lot of things I didn't understand. And I'm not making excuses for why I lost, but like there were things that were making it harder for me to win. And then several weeks later, I played the game again, the exact same list against the exact same list, and I rolled it so hard my opponent forfeited. And I was like, well, I think I probably learned something between those two games about how that matchup works and how my list works. And
was it Keith again or a different
Keith
person?
Keith sat there, and Jake Quimby technically played, but Keith sat there and offered advice.
Gotcha.
So it's not like he had no help. And then I rolled him so bad he forfeited, and Keith was like, well, that was pretty poor. There were some mistakes you made, whatever. So we re-racked, and again, Keith offered more advice that time, and again, he forfeited on turn two. Like, it was just completely different from the first time we played. And it was just amazing. And it was just little things that I had picked up from the first game, little tactical mistakes that I had made the first game that I didn't make, and little things that I had noticed would be good against Kara Sloan. Because, like, I write at the end, I'm like, these are things I should have done that would have been amazing if I weren't an idiot. And, like, those things help you as you think about them going
and
forward.
If you would have just walked away from the first game, oh, you just got me off dice.
Yeah, you just got me on dice.
And you wouldn't have thought about it, then you would have probably ran into the same kind of mistakes.
Yeah, and I mean, the thing is, he did, like, I've had a couple of reports I've written. I was like, well, I feel like I got diced. And then I was like, all right, well, I'm sitting here, I'm not in the moment of the game, I have a calculator. Did he dice me? And so I like did the math on like, did he dice me? Game with Keith is an example where I actually did math in the battle report to say whether he diced me. And yep, he diced me by about 15 damage that he shouldn't have gotten on me. I guess next time I'll play that particular piece the same way I played it, because I played it right. It shouldn't have died.
Yep.
Like, he did 40 damage to a 32 damage jack, and he should have had 15 less damage on me.
And people will get dice will be a reason of a
dice
loss.
Dice do happen.
But many times, though, you have to be very careful on that, because, yes, maybe mathematically he shouldn't have done it, but could you have moved your army in a way not to give him that many attack rolls and completely change it otherwise? Like, could you have
used And there were things I could have done to make the math even worse.
Yeah. So the lesson shouldn't be that only happens 1 out of 10 times. The lesson should be, what could I have done to make it never happen, or make it happen 1 out of 100 times?
Well, there's a combination of factors. Because there are times when you make a move that feels tactically correct, and then you get punished anyway. And if the lesson you take is, oh, that was a bad tactical move, maybe that's not the right lesson.
Well, sure, but I mean, that's true. But you have to be able to identify those times.
Yeah.
You can't use, well, that should have only happened, you know, that's a 20% or, well, 20% happens 1 out of 5 times.
Yeah, that's
you know,
common.
Could you reduce it to a 10% or a 5%?
Yeah.
And if you can't, and 20% was still the best tactical decision, then that's fine. But you have to be willing to sit down and look at it.
Yeah.
You can't just have anything that wasn't, you know, like... It gets annoying seeing the 49%ers happen, because odds are they shouldn't happen. But that doesn't mean that if 100 times it should never happen, because if 100 times it happened 49 times out of 100.
Right.
But you can't. You have to see when it can and try to reduce it.
I would agree. So anyway, so it's been interesting just taking all those really detailed notes. I'm a couple games behind.
49 is an exaggeration, but I really think all of us to some extent get frustrated when every tough check.
Yeah.
Like, every tough check, you're like, well, come on, man. Usually, like, most of the time, you don't roll. Like, a 1 in 3 should never happen. I had a 75% chance against this, that. Well, yeah, but that's still, you know, they still got a 1 in 4 chance of it happening. Like, 75% isn't 100%.
Well, I did a thing once where I was just recording how many dice are rolled in a game. And, like, people roll, like, up to 100 dice in a game. So you're going to get a couple box cards. You're going to get a couple. Those 1 in 36s, when you're rolling 100 times, you're going to get happening, you know, over the course of a game.
Yeah.
It's going to occur.
Like, now, Blood Bowl, you're going to go for it and re-roll and go for it and get a 1 and a 1. 1 out of 36 die rolls.
Yeah.
1 out of 36 fucking die rolls.
Yep.
How many times do you roll the dice in Blood Bowl? You know, but it's so frustrating when you roll a 1 and then a 1.
Yeah.
And you go, fuck it, that's astronomical. Like, it literally should never happen, a 1 and then a 1. Well, no, it happens, like, every game.
Yeah.
Also,
every game.
It also matters, too, of, like the example of Blood Bowl. If you're playing, like, an elf team, the only time you ever fail is on a 1.
Yeah.
So that way, in my opinion, or at least what it seems like to me, is when you see that 1 pop up, it's
It's just so frustrating.
Yeah.
It feels like bullshit. More.
Yeah, because you know, it's even though like you
one in six should never happen. God damn it! I should never fail.
Well, I'm saying it's I'm trying to fit
it's
it
a
into
betrayal
words here.
By the die because only that die can cost you the action.
Yeah, only that number is the one. So that way that number is so important to have pop up
right.
as compared to like a normal dwarf or something like that that's trying to just move. It's usually
and it needs like a five.
Yeah, or something like that. So,
but then to Brian's point, the original point, like what could you have done to not need to go for it? What could you have positioned to not have to roll the die in the first place?
You
know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so you have to, that's what you have to take from it. It's not just go, well, it should have worked. Fuck you, game. You have to think about it.
Sometimes people get lose by scenario. Like, well, why did you lose by scenario? I mean, what could you have done differently? Did you not, you know, there's all these things people, I think, don't look at when they lose a game. Like, oh, I lost because that guy's a named player, so I lost because of that. Well, no, you lost because you didn't. I mean, there's all these other things.
His models don't get stat buffs because he won War Machine Weekend. Like, he's still the same models.
Yeah.
My game against Felix, I lost that because I didn't shove as many drudges as I could possibly could into the zone.
Yeah, and you lost because Felix was smart enough to go for scenario. Mm-hmm. That's a game, if it goes long-term, he probably loses because your Thexus list is eventually going to destroy him.
Yes.
So he was smart enough to recognize I can only win via this method and went that method.
Yeah.
Because I've been in that scenario where my opponent can only win via scenario and never realizing goes for it, so then I win the game.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's these opportunities where your opponent has to... I lost someone last Wednesday or Wednesday, 2 Wednesdays ago because they were smart enough to realize they only had a path of victory and they took that route. You know, it's just...
Yeah.
It's I've quoted it 100 times and he had it in his signature for a long time. I don't know if he still does, but Rick's signature on the Privateer Press message board was whether you win or lose a game, if you know why it was a successful game.
Mm-hmm.
And that's such a critical piece of information that everyone should keep to heart.
That's for the
very
first,
true.
First like 6 months you play War Machine. I mean that's you're gonna lose games, but it's that learning process,
yes.
Learning what everything does.
It's the entire career. Like, you should always be doing that. But for your first 6 months, you shouldn't even care win or lose. You should expect to lose. Sure. You know, there's the go adage, which is to lose your first 100 games as quickly as possible. Because the expectation is that you will lose your first 100 games. And you're a fool if you think otherwise. It's pure hubris to go, well, I'm going to be so good when I start. No, you're going to get fucking annihilated. Because the game's complicated. You don't know what you're doing. Just go out there and lose. And learn why you're losing, and eventually you'll win.
Yeah, the biggest part, is knowing why you're losing.
Because if you can identify why you lost, just don't do that again, and you'll eventually run out of ways to lose. Is what it boils down to, right?
In theory, yes. Right.
In theory,
that's all you have to do is one by one eliminate ways to lose.
Sure.
Not even being sarcastic.
I'll tell you what, the more I've played in Mark III, the more I realize I need to just put a shield guard in every list. And it feels really frustrating to do that because it's, in my faction at least, it's, I think, a minimum of 6 points to take a shield guard. And it's frustrating because that's 6 points that could be doing other things.
There are some factions where it's a minimum of, like, 17 points.
That may be true.
Mm-hmm. I think Circle has to take, like, Rorsch and Brine with a... One of their heavies has it. Okay. But it's
so
like double. It's a double-digit investment.
Yeah.
And but anyway, they're the models you want a shield guard off of because you don't want the heavy to get hit by Alton. So
right,
if you
exactly.
You want your light to take the hit that they don't. It doesn't exist.
But my point is that, like, I probably just need to start putting a shield guard model in every single list because there are enough guns in the game that single-handedly do so much wreckage when they go off that, like, you just have to have an answer for them.
Yeah, I think if I do a pig caster, I have to spend, like, 28 points. Because I have to bring Wrong Eye and Snapjaw with a blind walker. I think that's the only way a pig caster can get a shield guard.
Really?
I don't think there's any minion solos that have shield guard.
The other answer is...
Or you can play Sturmendrang.
Or I can just play Sturmendrang and every beast.
And every beast is
Sturmendrang. That's why one of my lists is Sturmendrang.
Yeah.
What I found with my lists, if I make a list that's so aggressive and so fast and so ridiculous that if I can get to there shooting things first, I don't need any shield guards.
Yeah, it's true.
I mean, if you can go
speed
the other...
7 and advanced deploy infantry is all the shield guard you need.
I'm actually talking about, like, solos.
Yeah,
that they
tie
can,
up.
That they can
fuck
screen. Em. Like, that's the thing. Like, I got beat by I played a game against Dan Wasman this last week, and I had that game won dead to rights against his Vindictus list, and I got beat. I literally got beat by a single Reckoner shot. Like, just one Reckoner shot straight killed my caster.
So why was your caster in shot range of a Reckoner?
She was screened by a bunch of stuff, and, like, there was a bunch of stuff between them, but his list was able to remove it all, and then the Reckoner one-shotted my caster.
She
like,
should back further.
Or I could just take a shield guard and not care. It was the only gun on his list.
Yeah.
Like, right, literally,
you didn't
one
have a shield guard. So, like, that's the point. Yeah. Like,
my point is, I should put one in that list.
Or keep her back farther.
Or just.
Well, I was at the edge of the kill box. Yeah. She couldn't be back further.
How dead to rights had you won?
Not yet. Not fast enough to take two control points.
Okay.
Like, I needed to actually.
Engage the Reckoner.
And also, it was only going well because Calissa had done work that turn, which she couldn't do if she had.
Okay. Well, then there you go. Okay.
See, that was risk reward. You did this thing that we did some work, and then things went well, but then you died because you did work. Maybe if you took less work, you wouldn't have had to take a slower path to victory.
Your reward was death.
I don't know that a slower path was going to work for me there. But at any rate, the point remains that one shield guard would be huge. Jax
for cover.
Yeah, that would be nice, right? The good old days.
I'm getting closer to being able to do a scoring episode. I'm getting more of my casters play. I'm beginning to think I need to wait after the first major errata in like December, January before I do.
Oh god, I'm definitely not waiting that long to do errata.
I think I can do a minion one.
I could. I really am curious when they make their changes if it's going to impact every faction to some degree or only some. Like, I really wonder because I'm just curious what kind of impact, because we don't know. We don't know what kind of impact
we have no idea.
It's going to be. Yeah. Is it going to be just like, okay, they're going to fix the three most ridiculous models and the three worst models? Are they going to, like, every faction is going to get a little bit of a tweak?
I'm not going to lie. I suspect that what's going to happen, this is my guess, and I have no reason to base this on, that the three or four most egregious things are going to get quote-unquote nerfed the way Gatsby 2's first nerf was, which affected him, sure, but in no way made him not still the top S-tier caster in the game. And I suspect that's going to happen.
His first nerf was actually for something that was down the pipe.
Yep, they made him he couldn't use large targets, so it didn't even. Yep.
I'm talking the first one where they went from whatever it was,
non-character.
No, to ghostly. That was the non-character was much later when he went from
because you incorporeal lost, lost large base models first.
I was talking the incorporeal to ghostly.
Okay, that's like a second or third nerf.
Yeah. I mean, it's really curious to see because no one knows what to expect from their first level and. There's definitely some models who are probably pretty high tort. Some models that are pretty behind. We have tort and pip. Holy shnikes.
At the same time.
We have America, England, and Australia in this chat room.
We right are now. An international
and
chat
room. And wherever Monkey Moto's from.
Well, just say he's from Japan.
Well, it makes sense.
But yeah.
So, go ahead. You're talking about Mars. Something.
I don't know. I just realized
Travis is from Vulcan.
Travis is from Vulcan.
Yeah.
Which exploded.
So I'm sorry. Pip and Tor.
Actually imploded.
My brain, I just realized that was Pip now. I was thinking Pip. I assumed it was Tor. I kept thinking Pip and Tor were the same person.
What?
Well, I mean, I know. I figured Pip. I thought Pip moved to Australia.
And changed his name to Tor.
I mean, I knew. I just figured, and now. They're both here.
The new thing is like Pip's like it's like 2 a.m. for him.
Yeah,
right now. I've
missed you, Pip.
That's dedication.
Did you know that I met Nanlu Kitty Nick?
Yes,
I did not know that he's a fellow press ganger.
Is he actually non-Euclidean?
I don't know.
I've never met a non-Euclidean person before.
Don't know the definite. I don't know the meaning.
It's somebody who isn't Euclidean.
I would stab you in the head. What does Euclidean mean?
Euclidean is things that can exist in our definition of dimensions. Like, so a shape. So, like, take like a Klein bottle. That's a non-Euclidean shape because it literally cannot exist.
Take a what bottle? What?
Klein bottle. So, you know, a Mobius strip is a three-dimensional thing.
That's infinite.
It's a two-dimensional item that somehow only has one side. Yeah, and so a Klein bottle is the three-dimensional version of a Mobius strip.
Okay.
Where it wraps in among itself, and it has too few surfaces for the dimensions it has.
Where it's the three dimensions, yeah.
Okay.
What were they talking about?
Math! But so non-Euclidean Euclidean geometry is the geometry we use in our physical space. And so non-Euclidean geometry is like the elder god version of math, where it's like Cthulhu-based things that your brain just breaks in half because...
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yep. Yeah, I met him.
But is he non-Euclidean?
No. I met a listener on our...
You did. I did too. Aaron.
Was it Aaron? I thought it was Mike.
Is Aaron.
We have lots of listeners. We've met many of them.
Talked to the Gen Con for a while.
Yeah, and he said his name was Aaron, and you said, okay, I'll promptly forget that.
Well, I knew it was Aaron or Mike. I knew it was Mike. I knew it was possibly Mike, but then
was he the same
Aaron.
Mike that Andy played against in round three?
No.
Well, hi.
Because this was a Gen Con, not in Chicago.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I was talking about scoring. I don't know.
Now, Euclidean Nick says, hey, Trevor, there's no one named Trevor, anyone involved here.
Trevor would.
Is he talking about Travis?
I think maybe he means because Brian is talking about Scorn. I don't know.
Well, Trevor and Travis are very similar, so maybe he's.
They're almost identical.
They're almost identical.
They're very similar people.
I mean, when I think of not only just in personality and beards and political structure,
they both support the same tie break system.
Yep.
I know Travis is a huge fan of it.
Yeah, they're basically the same person.
Oh, and now we just wait for Travis's response in the chat.
He's driving here now with a very large stick,
just foaming at the mouth.
What else? Oh, I'm curious about the first thread. I'm like, what level they're if they're going to get like if they're going to be super cautious on the first thread and do a bunch of little things. If
I don't know. I think it's a fool's game to wait for the first.
They need to hit the big three things hard.
Yeah.
Which in your mind are?
The one, the other one, and the thing. So Madrak 2.
Sure, obvious. Everyone agrees he's number one.
Wormwood probably is there.
That one there's a lot of debate on, but okay.
Yeah, there might be. That's debatable.
No one who's
good at the game's debate on it. I mean, Wormwood's big trick is the Hellmouth moving Hellmouth thing.
That's
Veil.
The Forest. It's
No, he's talking the actual spell Hellmouth and being able to increase the threat range of his beasts by like 8-9 inches, something absurd.
Yeah.
He like Hellmouths you, and then he Hellmouths you, and the thing he Hellmouths, and the Hellmouths is beast, and he's just like, brah.
Yeah, exactly.
That was, which is amazing.
That was correct.
Yeah.
And the forest shenanigans.
It's the line of sight forests, because of the changes to forests, is big.
Yeah, yeah.
In the nerf.
And the way that they changed him, like, I watched every one of Tom Gwan's games for WITC, because it's not like I was playing well, and Tom Gwan literally, if my microphone stand is the halfway point of the table between me and Andy, he finished every single game with Wormwood roughly there, and then 4 or 5 inches in front of that, a Getorix, and then a half an inch in front of that, a caster, and the caster was obviously dead.
Yeah.
Like, every game, Wormwood was significantly past the half, and his whole army were significantly past the halfway point of the table. He could have at any time won on scenario, and he just decided to kill casters because it was funnier. Like, it was just not even a game. There was never even a game being played in any of those four games I watched.
I guess I haven't played him yet, I haven't played against Wormwood. Well,
and he can get really egregious on some tables, because if there's, like, a forest already, then you just have your sentry stones and whatnot. You can make, like, a 20-inch across. Like, you just block line of sight to your whole army constantly. Mm-hmm. Like, yep. You just put up this wall.
Without other forests, he can do a 16-inch forest wall every turn. 16 inches across.
Whoop.
Yeah.
Every turn. So I'm curious how they're going to, if they're actually going to make things that are weak better, if they're actually going to follow through.
I don't know.
I'm curious. I mean, I might, and also in a few months, we're going to see some theme forces, although that could be within a while, it could be longer.
In a few months, we're going to see the first two theme force books.
I still have to play about another month or so before I can do it.
Another year before I get like goddamn Thornfall and Blindwater rules back.
Yep.
Is that an issue specifically? I'm jumping back over to Wormwood.
Sure.
The fact that you can make that wall of forest, is that an issue specifically with him, or is that an issue with the sentry stones?
It's mostly him. He puts out a forest. Mm-hmm. Cassius fertilizes two models.
Okay.
And then the sentry stones make the rest of the 16 inches.
Okay.
Like, he himself, he and Cassius generate 9 of those 16 inches.
Okay. So couldn't another caster basically almost do the same thing with the little guys? The little wardens? Not wardens.
The problem is those guys are never far enough forward to put the wall in a meaningful place. Because what we're talking about is the first 2 or 3 turns of the game where you can't do anything to his army.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Eventually they get far enough forward and it's a problem, but me.
Okay.
Yeah, the Cloud Wall is bad, but the Cloud Wall of Signar can get a lot of things good around the Cloud
Signar
Wall.
Signar is just like, I don't care about Cloud Walls. My shooting casters I don't care.
More stuff ignores clouds than ignores forests.
Very, very few things.
That's because they tried really hard to make forests not a non-thing, but they didn't do that same with clouds. And so everything that used to ignore clouds and forests still ignores clouds. And then all of the things that used to ignore forests don't. And so forests just became like a hard vision counter.
Because
even Hunter doesn't let you see through forests anymore.
Yeah. I'm fascinated to see what the first thread will be. Yeah. I hope it's interesting. I hope they get bold and make some changes and do some stuff, but we'll see. I mean, I'm not going to be heartbroken if they don't. I mean, I understand a cautious approach as well.
I'm curious to see if they'll do, like, you know, like, obviously... There's changes, little changes, they did with, like, Ryas or something like that.
So here's the problem is, okay, so we've listed two of the three.
Oh, my God.
What?
Well, the fertilizer ability of, I didn't realize Cassius's fertilizer ability is an enemy.
No, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, that is bullshit.
Yeah.
Yeah, because Wormwood puts up a 4-inch, and then he just stabs a couple people and make 3 more.
Sorry, 10 of the 14 inches.
Yeah, 10, yeah. Yeah. I was like, where's the other ones coming from? Why is that?
And then he gets teleported back to Wormwood.
So yeah, so he goes up, he stabs two guys, then Wormwood puts out another 4 inches and teleports him back.
Yep, every turn. Anyway, so those two. And then for a third pick, you could pick Resnick 2 with Madeline Corbeau. It's pretty bad. You could obviously pick Ossian. She's not bad with anyone that's not Resnick. She's not. Because the problem is, anything that hits her, she just suckers into Resnick. She's like, hey, Resnick, you're out.
Right.
Like, Madeline Corbeau next to Ossian is just an easier target to put shots on.
I would be intrigued to see her. I see her mostly with him, but I'm curious how that would be. I mean, it still means some people can't take Melia. Well, I don't know. I'm not sure how bad it is outside.
Yeah, but my point is, so let's call those the top four.
Madrak
2, Wormwood, Ossian, and Resnick 2 / Corbeau.
Yeah.
None of the four of those have won a major event. None of the four of those have run over tournaments.
Well, Madrak 2 is just because Jay lost the game that he didn't play Madrak 2.
That's my point, is how you can't say that based on tournament data,
correct,
they're a problem. Because the tournament data shows that as soon as you play a caster that's not Wormwood, you lose. And as soon as you play a caster that's not Madrak 2, you lose.
That doesn't mean that Madrak 2 and Wormwood aren't good enough to be.
My point is, as Privateer Press, they have a very valid point to say, you guys are all jumping up and screaming about these things being overpowered, but it's not like Crix, where if everyone doesn't bring an anti-Crix list, they win the tournament. That's not happening.
Well, the other issue, though, too, is what they're really trying to push for in this game age for Privateer is fun games.
Mm-hmm.
And generally, from what I have seen, playing against, watching this Madrak 2 just basically swoop through your entire armor,
for the troll player,
kill everything in the world, and then come back and kill your caster,
or just be unkillable.
Yeah, that's not a fun game.
I played against a really, really a player who barely knows Madrak 2, who executed terribly, and it was like watching someone who doesn't have hands play a shooter on their keyboard with their face and still win.
That was Crix and Mark 2 was a lot like that. That's why Jordan went to his Dreamweavers, because Jordan, as eagle as he is, he hated
losing to Crix, a
player who doesn't know what he's doing but wins just because he said, I play Crix.
Yeah.
And losing to someone who doesn't know what they're doing, just throwing miles randomly around, and then still losing to him just because the word is Crix, gets frustrating.
And that is how Madrak 2 works right now. But the difference between Madrak 2 and Wormwood, which is why so many top people are upset about Madrak 2, is because they know that if they play a top player with Wormwood, Wormwood's actually probably better than Madrak 2, quite frankly. I've talked to several people and they agree that the top levels, Wormwood's better. The difference is that any chode at any random tournament can bring Madrak 2 and beat them, and that offends them.
So what they should do is, the Madrak 2 player should have to be able to explain the abuse of the stone, and if they can't, they're not allowed to play Madrak 2.
It's like,
if you don't understand that loophole, you're not allowed to play them.
No, I'm not a fan. I've never been a fan of this. I do not like divide and conquer lists where you're forced to play certain lists, because now,
In a world.
If the world exists where I can bring two quote-unquote balanced lists, and there is no such thing as some crazy skew that I can't beat. If I take two balance lists and I can take on any faction and have a
60-40
reasonable, 60-40 if like every possible terrain scenario and I go for, I lose everything exists, I'm okay with weird things.
Agreed.
But what drives me nuts is in a world, this was really bad in Mark 2, where there were literally 80-20 matchups.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you get these 80-20 matchups, and then you have to get divide and conquer, and you're on the 20 side. Like, why did I waste my time because of this forced divide and conquer? I don't know if we've played enough Mark 3 to know if those really exist. Outside of those one or two bad things.
80-20s exist. I play Ossian, and I can tell you that the majority of games that I sit down to with Ossian are an 80-20 for me.
But part of it is how much is your choice versus, I mean, could you make a balanced Ossian list? Or, I mean, because there's things where some people, like,
My list is a balanced Ossian list. Yeah. I have two jacks. I have several different units. I have lots of options. I don't have a lot of melee power.
His claim is just that Ossian just doesn't lose.
But Ossian, well, no, it's the problem is that because the combination of Deadeye and his feet is a combination that puts you into an 80-20 against a lot of matchups. It just does.
And that's a good example of a, to my opinion, it is kind of a balanced list where you have these multiple different things.
Right.
But I mean, if someone like Jordan Bouchois is playing like a 9 jack list.
Sure.
And he's creating 80-20s, but that's his choice. So if he gets into the 20 matchups and he gets into divide and conquer, I don't feel bad if he loses. because he created that scenario for himself.
The problem is if his list is 80-20 against enough of the field, then everyone else is getting put into a 20 position because of his skew list.
Correct. Well, and the thing is, though, and you can claim that Divide and Conquer is supposed to fix that or whatever, but the problem is that you can still get bit by it, even while building somewhat balanced lists.
Yeah.
Like I saw... several years ago, I think it was his first year playing, but Keith got bit by this. We went down to Gen Con, and it was a Divide and Conquer event, and he was playing Crix, and one of his two casters was Mortinebra. You know, it was like Denny 1 Morty or something like that. And they weren't skewless. It wasn't weird. He, you know, built fairly whatever, but the first round opponent was Crix. So he can't drop Mortinebra,
right?
Because she just doesn't play against
any list creation of her was not good against her.
You need living models. Yeah. It wasn't because it did skew. Yeah. It's she needs living models.
Yeah.
It was Crix and then Crix and then Crix and then Crix.
Yeah.
Until the last round, he just had to play Mortinebra and just lost.
Yeah.
You know, and it wasn't because he skewed. It's because Divine and Conquer said, "Well, you know what? Fuck you." And that's why when I see these conversations come up. And then you always get people like, well, see, it just moves the tactics into your list choosing more because you need to tactically realize come turn two or three, well, this list is 75% my benefit if I play this matchup, and this list is only a 60%, or maybe it's a 40%, but I need to play it now while it's not an 80-20. Well, no. Like, you should never be forced to play, and sometimes that just never comes up. Mortinebra was a 0% win every single round for Keith that event.
Right.
She never was going to win any of those matchups because it was Crix, 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 Crix.
Yeah.
You know, he brought Aquaman and Superman, and every fight was at the bottom of the ocean and had kryptonite mountains surrounding it. And it's like, well, I guess I'm fucked.
Yeah.
It takes the agency away from you, and that's so frustrating.
And if the game is truly balanced and PP pushes the gallons, and I still think at its core, Mark III is more balanced, except for some of the egregious things. I think it's a better game.
I would agree.
Except for the fringes. I think, and one idea people have been toying around, and I, without trying it out, I don't have any strong feelings, but I think it's worth trying out, is having one list events where you get like a big sideboard, like a 20, 25-point sideboard, where you can kind of change things out a little bit. It would be an interesting format to try out. It may turn out to be a terrible idea. I mean, I haven't done it, so I wouldn't endorse it.
Did you ever yourself bring ADR to Mark II tournaments?
We went to some ADR tournaments.
Did you actually play ADR?
Yeah, well, I only a little, because it was always ADR with the specific casters.
Okay, so Red had a good ADR pairing for quite a bit of the last...
Pretty much all of it.
Yeah, their ADR pairings were fantastic. Yeah. I took a lot... Whenever I played Red, I played ADR. I still think Legion was better in Mark II, but when I played Red, I played ADR. And the problem with playing ADR is you either get into a position where you take a semi-balanced list, and then by swapping 20 points, you make it a 90-10, and your opponent can go just... They don't even need to show up to the table. Like, there's just no point. Because... that's what you try to do with your sideboard, is just have fixes. So you're like, well, Austin has these like two things he doesn't want to see, but both of the things I could take for it detract from the power of the list in general. Excellent. Well, I'm going to take neither one, but they're going to both sit in my sideboard. And then Austin's going to just raffle stomp everything until all of a sudden I run into one of those two things, and I'm going to swap in the fix for it, and then they just have no answers.
But one of their list has those answers in their sideboard, doesn't
it? The problem is the power casters that with the right fixes can't be stopped. So
that may be true.
And so if for instance, there's something that beats Madrak 2, like let's say Ron Battle Mages, feels good into it. If there is something, some piece, that costs less than whatever you're allowed to swap in, that Madrak can have sit in his sideboard that just says Battle Mages can all just go get wrecked, then he just wins every game. Yeah. And he doesn't play it unless you happen to be playing Ron Battle Mages. But that's the problem, is a lot of the factions have these niche pieces that don't see play because they're overpriced in general and very specialist. But as soon as you can know you can bring them in for their specialist matchups, they're incredibly overpowered.
Yeah. And I haven't played enough ADR to really have a super advice on that. So, I mean, that may be the case.
And I don't know that that's true, but I worry that that's the case.
Yeah.
And maybe in Mark III it's not.
Because, again, if I feel that a faction can bring two... If the model exists and a person could go to an event with two... quasi-balanced list, whether they choose to or not, that's a player choice, but if it exists to bring two balanced lists and they choose to do it, as long as nothing exists that makes, like, you know, and maybe 1% exists, that's so extreme that the person would lose every game but against you.
Sure.
So you probably wouldn't even see him unless it was round one of some one in a million of type event. Yeah. That you can handle everything out there. That, to me, that's, I guess, maybe I'm just living in a perfect dream world. But that's a game I want to play for the rest of my life.
And that's the game I want to play too. And
where everything has at least a shot.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, not just a shot. I want to have a game where I don't feel, and this was why I didn't play Rhett much in Mark II, I don't want to ever sit down to the table and feel like no matter what I do, I'm playing a 30. If I'm playing 40 percenters all day, it's not great, but it's livable.
Because a 40 may come down to, okay, not only was the list bad, but the now table, the terrain is bad and the scenario is bad. And if all those things come down and it goes down to 40, fine. Because then it comes down to player skill, and I feel most times I can overcome some player skill
But when
issues.
I'm sitting down at a 30 before we even take into account the table, that's a pretty frustrating situation to be in. And right now, there are some skews that's the case.
Yeah.
Right
would,
now.
Would the one list sideboard that you're talking about there, would it possibly be where you could have a caster on your sideboard?
Yeah, maybe. No. Yeah, I'm not. Probably. I don't know. I haven't. Like I said, I think it's worth maybe goofing around with.
There's an idea there that I think has a kernel of possibility. I just don't know how it works.
The other list thing that I saw somebody post, and this was suggested in Mark 2, and I think even Mark 1, is where you bring three lists to an event, and you ban one, and then you can choose one of the other two.
Yeah, I heard
and
about
that. And that's... No.
No, nope.
Basically, making it so your opponent can't play something is... In my opinion, worse than...
Travis mentioned about giving your opponents a 20, though. I mean, I hope the I wish the game was good enough that scenario couldn't exist. I would prefer a game where my opponent... I can make it look so good that my opponent isn't stuck at that 20. I want closer to even.
I would prefer that game, too. However, since the game didn't exist, I wasn't going to not play Lilith 2 all the time.
Yeah. I want the game to be more of that system. Now, there will always be moments and the player skill can come. I want player skill to matter, but I don't want it to be so awful starting out that it's, some ridiculous thing. And again, that's what it has happened, things get made and they can get fixed, but that's what makes me excited. If I'm spending thousands of dollars on a game, I want to make sure it's as balanced and fun along the way. And I think Mark 3 has the potential of being that. I really think it does. And that's why I'm so excited to see the first errata. Because the first errata to me will tell me I might even wait two full erratas and give them their first toe in the ground or bigger errata, see what the reaction is.
But they
is.
Said they're only going to have a bigger errata once a year. So that means you're waiting roughly 18 months from now?
Yeah. Well, the first bigger errata might be
January.
December, January. There's been discussion.
So then, yeah, I mean.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, basically. 18
roughly 18 months.
But even we'll see what they consider. We'll see what they consider as big, and then we'll see what their next errata is considered medium is.
Yeah.
Because also in the next 6 and 9 months, we have all these command books and faction books coming out.
Which could make a big difference.
Honestly, I'm pretty excited to see the next year. Because I don't want to be like, well, man, the game. Because I don't feel the game sucks. But in a year and a half, if I see three shitty erratas and I see problems not being addressed, I could probably confidently say in 18 months I'm out of the game.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's a million things have to happen before that's kind of concern. But I mean, so I'm not really that worried. I think they're taking a good approach with everything. But I'm also some people say I'm going to play War Machine for the rest of my life. At some point I got out of Warhammer because at some point
people are having fun at my expense.
He's got a goddamn good point though.
What did you say?
That you don't have an itch. You're giving your opponents 20%.
No, and I said that. In a world where that exists, I'm
although
not.
Although you did
I'm
list a sign as one of your as one of the things that should be eroded.
Yeah, I think he should be. The problem is in a world where that exists, I'm not going to be the only guy who says let's play by Oxford rules and I'll bring a sword and no, but three of my opponents brought guns, I lose. Yeah. No, I'm going to play the best thing possible because I'm a competitive player. I don't want that to exist.
You're not that competitive.
I'm not that good, which doesn't mean I'm not that competitive. There's a difference.
Keith was the same way. Keith was like, I'm going to play this broken piece of shit thing because I hate it and I want the game to be better, so I'm going to play it until they fucking change it, so I'm going to bury it to the ground until it gets fixed.
Yeah. Like, unlike certain ex-players in the Madison area who are like, oh, nobody in this... We have a gentleman's agreement that nobody plays Iris because she's too good.
Yeah, no, fuck that.
Yeah,
exactly. At the end of the day, I don't want to... I have no interest in playing this made-up game that is not War Machine, but is War Machine with principles. And I want to win with my principles. That's not the game I'm playing. I'm playing War Machine.
One of the three major reasons I left Warhammer. Because Warhammer's that way. Warhammer's like, well, you get these comp rules up, and then it's all fine. I go, fuck you, I'm out.
Yeah.
Yeah, because basically...
And again, I'm happy with... I don't want this to come off as we're being negative. I love
War Machine. I love Mark III. I'm excited about it.
I think it's
going
to get better. I just, there's things where... It's good to have concerns.
Yeah.
I will say this, though. Travis did point out, too, is that... Technically, that would be the second errata.
Trevor. He is technically correct, which is the best kind of correct.
He is technically correct, but at the same time, I felt that this first errata was more of just a fix of things that they missed in the print.
The first errata was a typo fix.
Yes.
The only thing outside that was Karaslam.
And they buffed Brigands.
I think that was a typo fix.
It might have actually been a typo fix.
I don't think they meant to take away the charge on Grunwald. I think it was a
mistake.
Didn't
we find a problem that existed in the game?
There is an issue. It wasn't posted on the forums, but it was emailed to Travis, and I think he's probably looking into it.
Hold on. I have to address this. I have said on every fucking goddamn time I've been on air that I love Mark III. I've been posting on the forum. I have been posting threads. I have been upbeat at every event I've gone
to. Hold on. Before you finish here, when you're ranting about people that are typing things into the forum, you got to mention what they said.
Oh, sorry. Because somebody
audio. But no.
So somebody in the comments,
Pierce Sternum
said Jeremy just said he loves Mark III? Question mark. But I've gotten this every time I run into people. I run into people in an event, and they're like, "Well, you've been saying you hate Mark III."
You're such a negative Nancy.
I am not a negative. Oh my god!
Look how negative he's being about it.
Why are you so? There is, I will say now, there's different degrees. I think that we like the game. I think you can enjoy the game and still find nitpicking things. And, I mean, Nathan is the fucking king of liking something and nitpicking it to death. I mean, yeah. No one.
B+.
Exactly.
So
I think that's just a thing you understand. Because, I mean, I think I would take the gym approach. If I honestly didn't like the game anymore, I would just be like, I'm done.
Yeah.
I understand. I have many things in my life where I put a lot of money into it, and I realize, you know what? It's a negative experience. I'm going to stop putting time and money into it because, I'm every day I have less time. At some point, my time is pretty valuable to me.
That's how I was about my marriage.
Yeah.
Wait, what?
But anyway.
The current one or the last one? Does Raylene listen?
No comment?
Yeah. But yeah, no, I like it. I am having so much fun with my faction right now. I think scoring is amazing. I'm having a blast. I think the frustrations in the game are the same frustrations most people have against the power things, and that's just like whatever. It'll fix.
It's like having a child, and you love them, and they're amazing, and they're spectacular, and for some reason they keep coming home and getting fired from all their jobs and living in your basement. It's not that I don't love Mark III. It's that there are a few things I wanted to change about its life.
You want Mark III to get out of your basement.
That too.
Goddamn millennials. No, so snake people, by the way, that edit's great. But so Pierce Sternum said this, and I'm going to address this directly. Here. He says, where do you think the problem in breakdown is communication is if you keep running into people that say you hate it? At some point, maybe consider you're saying things that strongly imply it. And so I think that we are all thinking this and haven't mentioned getting it across. So the issue is if you despise something and you're like, well, yeah, but this one thing is good about it, and you're going to mention that one thing because it's the exception to the rule, and you're going to highlight it because, well, yeah, it's a pile of shit, but look, I found a dollar in it, and dollars are awesome. Let's talk about this dollar. We love Mark III.
Yeah.
We always loved War Machine and Hordes. Mark III, I think we all consider to be an improvement overall to the health of War Machine and Hordes. And so the thing is that there are so few issues now that we focus on them, and that's why they get brought up. And so the problem is because, I mean,
and they're kind of extreme problems. They're minor and extreme.
But we could sit here and just jerk each other off in a circle talking about how much we love playing War Machine, and we could do that.
You can put your hand lower when you're doing that.
I didn't want to accidentally actually do it.
I'm so sad.
Also, I'm complimenting. Look, this is how big his genitals are.
But, oh my God, somebody make that into an
anime. So the point is like, we, all the great stuff everybody knows is great. We all agree the stuff that's great. We don't need to talk about the stuff that's great, and so we don't bother to. And so we only talk. Right? Yeah.
Well, right.
You might
obviously
need to, but even then, it comes across as begging for things to think about, and you look like you're a scorn player who's grasping for straws. But that's the thing, is we only talk about the negative stuff because there's so much good, we don't feel the need to talk about the negative stuff.
Well, and not including Nick. The Mammoth and Scorn is so fucking amazing. That's my. You put Defender's Ward in that Mammoth, and you put him in the middle of the field, and you're like, okay, go fuck yourself.
The thing is, like, I got a lot of grief from people that maybe they'd gotten used to me as a Legion player after our very first episode. That first episode, Ethan and I spent the whole time high-fiving with our dicks about how amazing Rhett was and how Mark III was amazing and it was the second coming of Jesus. And then I spent 5 or 10 minutes saying, but there's some things I don't like about Legion, which is true. But I had just spent an hour having a permanent direction about Rhett. And what everyone walked away from was, Jeremy thinks Mark III's bad because Legion's unplayable garbage.
When you say positive and negative things, though, you don't say a slight positive
or
a slight negative.
No, I don't believe in slight positive and negative.
You go extreme on your comments. And I will say, you know, Legion is so bad that, you know, they got Masters and they got, and some other event they did good at. The Hellmouths are a thing.
Yeah.
Hellmouths are a thing, as it turns out. Holy crap.
But yeah.
Yeah. Well, then here, let's do this. Jeremy, what's your favorite thing about your faction? And then your favorite thing about Mark III in general.
Okay, my favorite thing about Retribution is Ossian having Deadeye. Like, there's just nothing that gets me as hard as that fact. My favorite thing about Mark III in general is the fact that...
I thought you were going to say the new Hellmouth.
Oh, well, gonna,
that gets you hard,
for Legion, the Hellmouth gets me hard. And for War Machine and Mark III in general, my favorite thing is that they got rid of command checks. Because fuck command checks.
That's a true statement.
Man, the command check's a really good one. Man, I might just agree with that. Although, if we can't agree, I love the point system. I think it's better. We had all talked about for years about doubling and then having a more fine line because there were 2.5-point models, and now those models can be 5 points. So the point system in general, with that and the adjustment of the scale and the adjustment of battle group points, I think armies feel better now.
Except for Makeda 3. What the fuck?
What the fuck, Makeda 2?
Makeda 2, yeah.
And then my favorite thing about my faction, I love that they got rid of the contract restrictions. It feels so fresh and amazing to have gators and pigs crisscross. There's so many new combos. Like, I have my list with Sturm and Drain TKing the gator battle engines forward. It's fucking great.
That's a great question from Non-Euclidean. Jeremy, what's something you said slightly annoys you about Mark III? Please exaggerate the context.
Oh my god.
Oh. Your turn.
What?
Your favorite turn. Your favorite thing about Scorn and your favorite thing about Mark III in general.
Mark III in general, it sucks.
That's the worst. I'm going to Age of Signar.
He's channeling Trevor.
Signar?
Signar, no, whatever.
This is the new edition, the Age of Signar.
The thing I like, I mean, Scorn, Rasheth is amazing in Scorn. He's just phenomenal. Having debuff casters is just so good to be able to debuff. It brings my inner creeps up.
He still have Unyielding Flesh or whatever.
It's better now.
Yeah,
it's,
well, I know it's better now. He still has it, right?
Yeah.
Dude, the Swamp Whore has it, and that thing's a fucking tank.
Yeah.
It's this armor 15 heavy. It's like armor 15, and then I do these things flail on it, and it does, because it's got 30 hit points at armor 15, but with Unyielding Flesh, it's just this amazing thing.
Guess what rule the Hellmouth has? And all of its tentacles.
But like the single wound tentacles still...
are really hard to kill for a lot of things.
I guess armor 18. For a lot of things, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty bananas.
Mark III in general, I'm just...
That thing, what is it, like 5 points? Six points?
6 points.
Okay, fuck you.
I mean, the point system is really great. I like it. We haven't seen a lot, but I like their approach to contract so far.
Yeah, the couple we've seen are good.
I mean,
Kingmaker seems really, really strong.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that as a negative thing. It seems really strong, and I'm interested to see how it's going to work when you can have Feign Death on your caster every turn.
Well, some casters already had Feign Death, and they weren't ruling the world, so...
Right, but some casters were balanced around it, and some weren't. It'll be interesting to see how that interaction works. But anyway, sorry.
I think I like pre-measuring quite a bit. It's weird. When I thought about pre-measuring, I thought it was pretty cool. But the fact you are able to pre-measure with proxies, which I guess kind of makes sense to some degree.
I was surprised by that ruling as well, but it's been amazing for me.
It is amazing, but man, when you sit down against someone, you have to like... Because you almost have to put... tokens, if you put a model somewhere to keep you safe, you almost have to pre-measure what your opponent can do to see you can, like, you literally start putting, you know, almost like counter tokens down just so you don't walk into some terrible thing.
I'm just going to elaborate on that too. I agree with you on that.
Don't get negative.
No, I love pre-measuring too. I love the fact where I can go like, well, is he really 15 inches away from the side there? Oh, he's 14 and a half? Oh, I guess I'm ambushing from that side.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, it's I mean, I still don't always measure everything out, but that, in addition to my ability to actually gauge things fairly well, works out.
Yeah. The combination of being able to be like, well, three activations for now, I want to be able to put this here. All right, I want to put a base there. And then, so the two activations for now, then these other two things have to be here and here. I'll put bases there. Excellent. Which means the activation I'm doing now, these things have to go here and not impede either of those things. Great. And it's just like, you can just like... Machiavellian your turn in an amazing way.
Not how Machiavellian. That's nowhere near that. Unless you are having your models betray each other and manipulate their needs and desires to convince their loved ones to turn them into the police.
Oh my god, that was so
weird. That's not how fucking Goddamn ignorant savage.
That's more Shakespearean.
More Shakespearean. I apologize.
You mean Rube Goldbergian?
Rorschachian.
No, Goldbergian! The Rube Goldberg devices!
I'm aware what a Rube Goldberg device is.
How many Clinton of you?
Fuck!
Sorry, Andy.
So, my favorite thing about my faction, I really love some of the changes to some of the solos. I really like how Reinhold kind of turned into just a reload bot into somebody who's
amazing,
just detrimental to my opponent. You know,
the stealth removal.
Iris is across the field. I know she's going to shoot my Jack and cause issues. Fuck it.
The only problem I have with that guy is he doesn't play for Rhett.
Now he's a reload bot and a, hey, look, there is somebody over there. You should shoot boss bot.
He's amazing.
He's really good.
And I think it's actually fairly balanced with him being an attachment, because one of the factions that love him is Signar, and they can't take him and the Squire, and I think that's great.
I like the attachment rules as well.
Yeah.
It's very nice.
Yeah. I do have a question that might fulfill non-Euclidean's Nick earlier question. Jeremy, how do you feel about Aeon and Holt's current position in a Retribution army?
I'm fine with it. It's fine. It's not a problem.
Hey, they work fine in my armies.
Yeah, they're really good in like every other faction's armies.
God damn
it. They're partisans, aren't they? Isn't that really good for you?
She's a fucking elf! God damn it! She's a fucking seeker!
Yeah, Holt isn't, though.
So make her a partisan!
So just
you can't break up a unit that way.
Just bring your goddamn ranking officer to make them be faction, and then they'll work for everything.
Oh, rage building.
Oh, I'm sorry, you're right. Just bring another mercenary unit, and since they're mercenaries, they'll work for that unit.
Except the only mercenary unit I can take is fucking partisan!
Oh, yeah.
I can't, because the only other thing I take that's not a partisan is the fucking snake, which is a minion, not a merc.
Yeah.
God damn it.
You can take the snake? Oh, yeah, but it's not a merc, so...
But it's not a merc, so it doesn't... yeah. Go fuck yourself.
Yeah.
Nice.
Good times.
Oh, my God.
We have a lot of Zappity Grumbles.
We do. I have them all up here. One of them, the
one was not... He one didn't respond. One just did a general message.
A Twitter one, too, I saw one. But that one, it was like your top 10 board games. And God, that has to be an episode.
Well, we had a similar...
Somebody's asked similar stuff to that, like every couple weeks for a while.
The question was.
Top 10 board games. And it's been years. Well, five years ago.
Yeah, it was
a while ago.
We could probably do an updated board. But that needs to be like a whole episode again, like we did previous. We can't do that right now.
Oedipal, that's the word I was looking for.
You want to have sex with your mom?
It's very Oedipal when you're able to engineer your turn that way.
Just the whole time you're thinking about your mom's vagina and how great it's going to taste.
Jesus Christ.
And then you kill your dad and blind yourself. Great Tom Weir song, though, by the way.
Also, excellent movie with Adam Sandler.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Anyway,
Zappity Grumbles.
Who went to Zappius up here?
I have the Facebook ones up here.
Okay.
Yep. Jeff Wok asked if we had a chance to play Legendary Encounters Firefly at Gen Con, and how would we rate it?
I almost bought it.
That's my story.
Done.
None of us have played it.
Sadly, we haven't.
I'll probably blind buy it.
Grumble.
Best two-player board game that nobody has played before, especially on a date.
It's hard to say if we haven't played it. How do we know what it is?
Do you mean
like that we haven't recommended before? Or do you mean that we think other people haven't played it? I think he wants us to recommend ones we think people, like obscure ones.
I'm going to go obscure and say Seven Wonders Duel, which isn't obscure, but it's a good two-player
game. It is a good two-player game. I actually just picked up... Oh, man, now I'm forgetting what the name of it is. What's the name of the game I bought at Gen Con?
Zappity?
You bought so many games at Gen
Con. That's what that is.
I still like Hive.
Jeremy without Katie at a con is amazing. You can't stop spending money.
I really couldn't. I almost bought a $1,000 original from an artist. Unfortunately, earlier that day, he agreed to sell it to a family friend instead, so I bought the print for $40.
Otherwise, he was going to walk away.
Last year, I held that original in my hands with Katie standing there, being like, I love you, and I can't tell you no. It's an original hand-done print he did before any maps existed of the world of Fire and Ice. And he handed the entire map of Westeros, every town, every city.
Every major town, yeah.
It's amazing. Amazing. And I held it in my hands, and I looked at Katie. She was like, I love you. I'm not going to tell you no. And I looked at it, and I looked at Katie, and I looked at it, and I looked at Katie, and I handed it back to him. And I walked away. And this year, I literally, Brian was like, oh, we should go to the artist hall. I was like, excellent. I'll see you there. And just, like, ran towards the artist hall, went up to his booth, and he wasn't there. His assistant was. And I was like, I want that. And she was like, we sold it? I was like, fuck.
Wait, I think this game that nobody's played before is Pip, unless I'm mixing my names up. So he can just clarify if he's still awake.
I think he's saying the best game if you haven't played it before.
Yeah, that's
except Tort. That's Tort, not Pip, so that's less helpful.
Yeah, but the, I don't
what,
know.
No, what's the name? That's,
well, if
that's
Will. Will.
Yeah, it's Will Hahn.
Yeah, Will, Will Hahn.
Yeah, I thought that was Pip.
Or you could be Hide the Monkey.
Well, fingers crossed. what's currently the best way to play Crix?
By playing Rhett instead?
No, I honestly, I think we're at the time where people have to get inventive with Crix.
It's a good time to discover what's good about Crix. I just don't know what it is.
And I haven't looked at it. I have no helpful information.
Looking into it from, because I played Crix at the very end of Mark II, looking at it from that perspective, it's difficult to try to build a new list with Crix because I'm still thinking old Crix. So I think somebody fresh into the army might have a better stand.
And if you don't want to get creative, like I wasn't kidding, I think Denny 1 Venithrax is playable. I just don't know what other pairing they have.
Denny 1 and somebody.
Denny 1 yeah, and Venithrax seems solid.
But you play Denny 1.
Denny yes. 1 is
Denny 1 gunline still works.
It's, yes. Yeah, she's works still untouched. Still fine.
All right. Name three rules in Mark 3 that you would change.
Oh, we talked about this one rule that we kind of found out. Didn't realize that it exists. Did mention that it was something that was sent over to Travis, the guy who thought about it or found out about it, didn't actually post it. Turns out that if you charge, during an action that you charge, you cannot grab and smash.
Why?
You can't make power attacks when you charge.
You're prevented from doing power attacks?
Yep. In Mark II, it was worded slightly differently.
It was prevented from being your combat action, but no, now it says you can't do it at all.
For Mark II, it said that when you make a charge, you cannot make a power attack as your charge attack.
Correct.
That was what the Mark II
and now
one
it
was.
Just bans power attacks.
Now it just says you cannot make a power attack on a turn you charge.
That seems unintentional.
It does.
Sure does.
It was very weird.
And I have definitely cheated savagely with my Hydras.
I'm sure everyone's smash and grab. I mean, I'm sure everyone's doing that wrong because it's a very weird. It's just like one of those things someone was going through.
It's weird. It's worded perfectly to prevent it.
It is worded. You cannot do that. I don't think anyone realizes it. Breaking news: you can't smash and grab and charge.
Yeah, idiots. Almost certainly a mistake.
Interesting. Someone posted online. You could you listener post this online now, and you will.
Travis says he has one.
Huh?
Travis says he has an answer for this question.
Ooh, he has
we'll
an
see if he'll deign to give it to us in chat or if we have to go make a thread in the rules
forum. A person could have just gave us the answer, but not Travis. He has to let us know he has an answer.
Pierce Sternum asks if that means you cannot charge in combo strike, but that's different. That's a star attack. That's not a power attack. Power attacks are specifically throws, trample slams.
Headbutts.
Yeah, throws and headbutts will be the main one. You can't charge and then throw something.
Correct.
Yes.
By nature of using up your move, you're obviously not going to charge and then trample or slam.
Yep. So that's completely different. Under power attack, it just says specifically what normally was the sentence that said that your charge attack, you cannot use a power attack in place of a charge attack. That sentence was replaced with what you cannot use a power attack on a on an activation that you had charged.
Trevor has responded, and he has said he's not going to tell us.
Yeah.
But he has an answer.
Anyway, we'll go and I'll make a thread in the rules form.
Yeah.
Next question.
I made a rule thread in the rules form this week.
Other than that, I don't really. It's a longer answer. I don't really know what rules I change. I think it's more than just changing. I think it's evaluating things versus just a rule.
Yeah.
Drunken Dark Soaks. Probably Souls. Supposed to be. No, that's a K, not an L. Drunken Dark Soaks 3 live stream.
Like I said, I'm pretty sure it's supposed to be
Dark
Souls.
Souls, yeah.
I think it's
I wouldn't mind doing that. It would be basically almost a pain that I'm going through in Fallout 4.
That game
mode.
Seems like it would be even more detrimental to try to play drunk since it's a kind of there's
it's a very big memory game because you go forward, you remember how you die, you try to
you have to remember thing. The combo of that, like it just seems miserable to me.
I love the thing. I don't remember if Andy saw this or if somebody else showed this to me, and I know that Andy would have seen it also because he watches everything that the Rooster Teeth guys do. But a guy in Dark Souls, he killed an NPC.
Okay.
He put on all the gear to make him look like that NPC. He hid that NPC's corpse like in a closet, and then he just walked around the NPC's predetermined path. So when people invaded his realm, they just ignored him. And they'd run past looking for him to try to kill him, and he'd just be like, they would literally, like, he's blocking a door, just like looking around, and they're waiting for him to move so that they can go through that door. And then he'd go and he'd do like, you can do a toggle, like you can press a button so like you whistle for their attention. These people would hear the whistle and they'd come looking, and again, that fucking NPC would be in their way and they'd run past him again. You stop. Yeah. I go, yeah. And then the great punchline is the end is a guy goes off the path and goes down to where the closet is. And so he follows the guy, and the guy goes to the closet, sees the corpse, turns around, and he's standing there, like looks at the corpse, turns back, and then the guy stabs him.
That's fucking amazing.
Well, yeah, they kept on showing him killing off the guys too. Yeah. He would sneak up behind them and just kill them as they were looking for him.
The one that found the corpse and turns around, and he's just standing there, and the guy's like,
That is pretty amazing.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, I watched somebody basically pretend to be a statue while there was like a ledge over a spot, and just watched some guy just push somebody over the ledge continuously as they kept on spawning into their world.
Good times.
Yep.
Wild speculation on the grown-up warlocks. Una et al.
Oh, yeah. I'm excited about the Legion one. I didn't play her because my only copy of her Andy's had for over a year.
Mm-hmm.
But the Legion one is Fianna becoming a caster, which is kind of exciting.
I don't know that they've... I think they did say not to expect it for a while, so I think I just should not have my hopes up, but I really wish that Rorsch or Wrongeye would become a full-fledged caster.
Rorsch, cool Wrongeye, idea. Dahlia, and Brunn. I think they would be cool them. To
like,
see them.
Because Gators and Pigs have a full stable of beasts, like Dahlia becoming a full-fledged one would be weird. Same with Brunn. Like, you know, he can only... You know, he has his one beast, but like... There's no reason Rorsch couldn't be pigs. Rorsch too could be a full fledged warlock.
Yeah.
He's got all the pigs to go through. Same with Wrongeye, could be a full fledged gator warlock. But Rorsch we've had forever. Like Rorsch specifically, I would die for
Rorsch
too.
You just love Rorsch.
It'd be cool. That fluff's amazing. I love Rorsch so much.
I agree. Yeah, that'd be amazing. I'm excited for my guy. I mean, tag team is an amazing spell, so he'll probably lose it.
Well, that's what happened to Malakoff.
And he's got Perdition, which he has two amazing spells on his card, and he has a built-in defensive mechanism, so who knows what he could do. There's a lot of fun potential there.
I'm excited. I'm intrigued. I haven't actually been super excited about the last couple of casters Legion got. They're just not – didn't tickle my particular interest. But I always liked Fianna, and so seeing her become a caster could be really interesting.
Oh, my Lord. We do have
– Also, a caster with 4-inch reach is an exciting idea.
Zappity.
Did you have one in the troll one real quick before we move on? Because you're a troll guy.
Trollish. Horgel's, I mean, he's cool in general right now. I'd be neat to see what he does.
It'll be interesting to see how they deal with the restrictions.
Una doesn't have any birds on her sculpt, so the restriction might be gone. Yeah, who knows? It could just be like a veteran leader or something.
It could be.
Hez Mark III put the nail in War Machine Tactics' grave. Another nail? Does anybody
do people play? I honestly, I'm not even trying to be joking. Do people play that?
They have.
I think sometimes people click on it when they're doing their Steam thing.
When they're going through Steam.
They misclick.
Yeah.
It's like, now it's launching! Throw the computer in the garbage!
I just haven't really messed around with it. I mean,
I keep meaning to go actually just like at least play through the campaign, and I just, there's so many video games out there I want to play.
I've heard campaign mode is actually fun. It's just, it's unwieldy for multiplayer.
Yeah.
Zappity.
Will the age of rolling releases bring about the dreaded Codex creep?
I hope not. I really, really hope not.
The core, they have so much out already. I don't think it's good. I mean, it's a fair, I guess, I don't know if it's a fair concern. I can see why it's a concern because it has happened in other games.
The two reasons I'm not concerned is the two things that I don't think will happen. Number one is no one faction is going to go a decade without getting anything.
Yeah.
Like, you're not going to have Bretonians.
Yeah.
Where you go a decade and don't change. And number two, these releases are going to be, here's a theme force and a couple models.
Yeah.
It's not, here's new rules for all your models.
Correct.
Which is the real thing that the Codexes did, was take an army, change everything, and make it either broken or garbage.
To take the devil's advocate approach, there are many that felt the last couple of books in Mark II were, hey, this one faction got a bananas caster, and everyone else can just go eat a dick.
It's true, but they got a bananas caster.
Caster makes a big difference.
No, it does, but not as big a difference as, hey, every single day model they had just become the greatest on the planet, which is what the full-fledged... Did you ever play
War? No, but I understand what the full-fledged
They literally would change...
Yeah.
This, here's a new addition, but only for your faction.
Yeah.
And so if it's not balanced well, that faction wins everything forever.
The second part, if true, is also great, where you get a book... And you know when that book's hit, within 3 months or so, everything for that book is out. If they're able to do that, that's amazing. Because then you don't see when I see a new book, some factions are lucky and a new book comes out in 3 months, one faction gets everything, and some factions wait 18 months for an inflictor. You know, so there's this thing where
unfortunately, Crix is unplayably bad.
Protectorate doesn't even have their jack. That jack hasn't been previewed yet.
Yeah,
so Crix did go a year without getting a model physically.
They not a single model. Yeah,
that was brutal.
So, I mean,
they were still winning all the events, so, you know, it's a little hard to cry too hard for them.
Yeah.
But
so yeah, we'll see. I mean, I think there is obviously like everything, it could go bad, but I'm gonna see how they handle it before I get too worried about it.
On the bright side, if it goes at all badly, then I'm gonna come on here and talk about how it's the worst thing ever, and everyone should just quit playing the game because fuck the book system release.
Yeah.
What do the Firefly board game expansions add? Do you think they're mandatory?
Yes. 100% mandatory. Yes. The core game. Yes. I was talking to someone online. The core game to me is a 7 out of 10. The maybe even a 6.5. I want to be super negative. I think with expansions, it's like an 8.5. The expansions add more player interaction with player versus player missions. Mm-hmm. They add in new zone to make the map bigger. Mm-hmm. They make the dynamic of the Reapers more deadly.
Way better.
More
the fun. Reaper. The Reaper.
Every deck deal. That you get equipment from, and every quest deck gets more interesting types of quests, more gear. Basically, if you go to a place and if you could serve between 20 cards, it gets old fast. Now those decks have 50 cards.
Yeah.
Right.
So instead of having 4 core ships, now there's like 12 ships total.
They don't add a lot of extra rules. Like playing it today felt the same as playing the core game, because I would jump straight from core game to everything.
Yeah.
Like, this is the first time I played since any expansions came out. And to me, it felt like I was doing the exact same stuff, but just the more things were happening that were interesting around me. It wasn't more complicated at all as a player.
Every core element's the same, except the core game, it's like you do a mission, you get a reward. Now you do a mission, there's more modifiers in quests for higher chance of success. There's more gambling involved. There's all sorts of just, you know, neat things. Excuse me. I like it quite a bit. I love the expansions. I've gone all in. I mean, I go crazy on Firefly.
I would argue that it goes from a 6 with the base game to a 9 with the new versions.
Yeah. I mean, I think the expansions make that game.
I think it's one of those few games that playing with all the expansions actually makes the game better. Yeah. As compared to like our Arkham Horror Disaster. Days. Where if you play with all the expansions, just means you're never going to complete a mission.
Nothing was worse than that experience. I think that was almost the worst experience than playing. Not only did we put every single expansion, we filled up an 8x4 table. We also, for the first time, tried playing with 8 players.
The first game of Arkham Horror I ever played was 8 players every expansion. I killed myself and was reincarnated and then re-aged to this point.
That is actually that is a moment where I go, you know what? I never knew this, but I actually understand suicide now.
Yeah,
like I always thought it was a terrible thing, but now I get it. I could this was happening could stop happening if I just kill myself. It makes sense.
It does.
Oh my God!
Suicide is painless. It brings on many changes, and I can take a leave it if I try. How much chuck could a hut chuck if a hut chuck could chuck?
I might buy another hut chuck.
Another one? It's a kid.
I thought I didn't need him, and I might
he's
not.
He's huge.
He is huge.
He's huge.
Ridiculous.
Huge. He's making. And the one you told me has the little gas mask head on.
Yeah.
His head is tiny. Yeah. It's a teeny little gas mask, and it's was cute.
ISM will for you, probably?
No.
I don't know.
That's why he has a gas mask.
I have yet to see Hutchuck on the table. I just hear about him all the time. Mask.
I saw him once, and he ambushed and got a lucky damage spike to brain damage into like an armor 19 caster.
Hey, you know what's an amazing rule? Brain damage.
Yeah.
You know what's amazing is when it can't be shield guarded.
Yeah, so that's speaking of things to learn. I didn't know that, and now I put vision on that caster and beat you every time we play that matchup again. Because, man, was my list really teched against you, it turned out.
It was pretty teched
against me. And the only reason I lost was because of how bad brain damage is, and if I had vision up, never happened.
Turns out Sturm and Drang don't enjoy being brain damaged.
Turns out you can't shield guard sprays in Mark III.
Nope.
Pineapple on pizza, delicious or blasphemy?
Delicious.
Delicious.
Blasphemy. Yeah, blasphemy.
Fuck both of you. Guys. I don't agree with Jeremy often, but he's right and you're wrong. No.
I'm not a fan of like weird shit on my pizza.
Pineapple's not weird shit.
That's normal it's pizza. It's delicious.
Food. This is not Hawaii.
The things you put on pizza are pepperoni meat, sausage. Meat.
Okay, fine.
More meat and pineapple. And
pineapples.
Mm. Oh, and banana peppers.
No.
Only if the pineapple is from the place downtown. Then they can put it whatever they want.
Ian's?
No.
Sambas? Yeah.
Their pineapple going
on. Oh, God, their pineapple.
I hate pineapple except for their pineapple. That can go on everything.
They should have a toggle that's pineapple only. They really should. And then ketchup. Oh, that's interesting because he spelled K-A-T-S-U-P. So he combined the two versions of spelling ketchup. Wrong. But catsup on mac and cheese, delicious or abomination?
Abomination.
It's more acceptable than maple syrup, which is what Raylene puts in her mac and cheese.
Also an abomination. Whoa,
that is an abomination.
Although, hilariously, I know someone who puts ketchup on French toast, which you're supposed to put syrup on, so...
What is going wrong with the world? Although, I just realized peanut butter and eggs go together, which is blowing my mind.
Deliciously, because it's basically Thai food. And then you put some noodles in there, and yeah.
You know, I tried it. I did not think it would go. It's amazing. It's fucking amazing.
Because like you said, like Thai food. I had... forgotten about something that Raylene had me make once and turned out it was delicious and I ate it for like a year while I lived at Andy's place. I had forgotten about it until yesterday when we were talking about fair food, but a peanut butter, mayonnaise, and pickle sandwich is amazing. You put bread and butter pickles on a peanut butter and mayonnaise sandwich.
Except there's mayonnaise, which makes me want to throw up all over the table.
Mayonnaise is the greatest.
No, it's not. How that
I have used it as a mixer in alcohol. It's great. Oh. It is great. Mayonnaise. Don't knock it till you tried it.
I've tried mayonnaise. It's puke, but mixed together with other kinds of puke.
I like mayonnaise. Honey is good, and that's puke.
Tart, that's a great idea.
Smear peanut butter and crackers before you combine them with eggs. Yeah. That does seem like it would work.
I love crackers and peanut butter. I like eggs and crackers.
Yeah, get the peanut butter patty ones that you can crumble those up into the eggs.
Ooh, fancy. Save yourself a step.
I forgot what we were talking about.
That'd be like a deluxe version.
A deluxe version of crackers and eggs.
When I open my restaurant and I just sell eggs and crackers, I can have the deluxe eggs and crackers.
You can't have a restaurant that serves raw eggs because you'll kill all your clients.
Well, you know, it's a cash industry.
That's what the waiver's for. We haven't done our raw food episode yet. I was going to bring steak tartare. You're going to bring eggs and crackers. Oh, I was going to bring my pickles. So you can eat pickles. Oh,
I wish you'd done that.
Oh, I've got a jar of pickled beets at home and I'm just eating with a fucking
shovel.
That's
less exciting for me.
No.
Pickles, I'm down with.
Pickled beets are amazing. Have you actually had them or just sent a kid, you've always assumed they were terrible.
I had them. They're okay.
They're like sweet like candy.
I disagree.
No.
I'm going to bring my pickled beets.
Beets, no. No beets in this house.
Butters and raw. That's not the American cracker, though. It has to be the salty. It has to be the most generic salty.
Also, you can't improve on perfection, and Nutter Butters are already perfect.
Mm-hmm. I'm sad I don't eat them because they're 280 calories per container instead of 200 calories.
Everything delicious is too many calories per container.
I know, but I mean, it's a calorie thing, and everything, all my other snack foods are 200 calories. It's a little, as I went to the store to buy Nutter Butters, and it was 280 calories
and
per
package.
And
you cried a little bit.
I was mad because I only go 200.
They should have just given you like four fewer butters, Nutter Butters.
Well, there's four per thing, right?
So they should have went to three, and then it would be 210 calories.
Because if I open it, I'm not going to just not eat all four.
No.
Like, right. I should just put one away.
Well, it's like, what fucking savage? The serving size for goddamn Pop-Tarts is one motherfucking Pop-Tart.
Well, they come in a calories, two Do you know what calories two Pop-Tarts is?
Why do they come two in a pouch? And your toaster has two slots. Yep. You open the pouch, you put two Pop-Tarts in them, you eat two Pop-Tarts.
And then you just ate 400 fucking calories.
It ain't right, man. It ain't right.
400 calorie breakfast isn't terrible because I try to eat around. I mean, it's not the worst.
I think they're actually just over 400. But I think it's the point is Katie likes Pop-Tarts. 400 calories for a girl is absurd for breakfast.
So you have to like split and you each eat one tart?
Or Katie just eats two and says, fuck it.
That's what I do. Ben Lang wants to know if we're getting this, because this leads into this. Ben Lang wants to know, are we getting older? Did this shit just used to be easier? Imply this to everything and anything.
I think this shit used to be easier.
We'll go with that. Nice.
Zappity. Have you played Dead of Winter expansion yet? You think Universal no?
No.
No. No, I haven't played Dead of Winter normal.
Should, it's good.
I own everything for it. I have all the expansion characters for it. I just have not played it.
Oh, right, my God. Good. I forgot to tell Andy and Nathan this. Brian knows because he was watching my spending bonanza at Gen Con. Think back to the best game we've ever played together that made us all want to kill each other afterwards. Like the game where you just can't be friends afterwards. Like Katie would regularly bake cookies because it was the only activity we could all participate in after playing a game of this together.
Was it nothing personal?
It was nothing personal, and I bought not one, not two, not three, not four, but five expansions for Nothing Personal at Gen Con, so we need to get together and play Nothing Personal again, and all not be friends again for a while.
We just have to stream the room. We have to watch the game. It's like stream must watch the moment someone cracks.
Which is every moment of the game.
I don't think I've played that since it first came out.
No, we played it with you several times in the first few months after we got it, and then it was like, maybe we can't play this game anymore because we want to keep being friends with each other.
Yeah. Pierce Term is right, though, diplomacy. I need to get another play online diplomacy game going. We should do another one with hidden identity because that really made it a lot better when we weren't allowed to tell each other who we were.
You guys seem to really like that, yeah.
Are we almost done with Zappity Grumbles?
We have two more.
All right.
I'll get Twitter up.
Which promoted journeyman is the best and which is the worst? Your factions is the worst according to your faction.
Disagree.
Mm-hmm.
Every faction thinks theirs is the worst.
Every faction.
That's why I said according to your faction. Yeah. No, it is true that according to your faction forums, your faction is the worst.
No, the Red Forum does not think ours is the worst. They just don't think it's the best. They think it's number three.
Okay.
Okay. To be honest with you, I like the idea of Ayakos. I think he's
the worst.
I actually don't think he's good.
I think he's the worst. Yeah. And I think that Protectorates is the best.
Really? I think it's probably either Malakov or Lara, actually.
But I think it's a really tight fucking group. I don't think anyone's super garbage.
I think Ayakos might be super garbage. Ayakos is going to die
easily, and Ambush can be a trap spell. Although I do like Crabjacks with him, because they have good guns on the way in.
Well, I like Malice with him.
Yeah,
Malice
sure.
with him works out fairly well. With Harpoon Drake, you can still get the Harpoon Drake on a failed assault charge. So you can hit him, and then he brought him in. Smack him, because you get the free smack as part of the drag, and then possess him, and then move that jack back.
Yes, but then your activation ends.
But then Malice's
drag still happens.
The drag still happens, possession still happens, and then that other jack is...
Yeah, you drag him, smack him, and move him even further into your lines. Yeah, sure, that's true, that's true. The failed assault with the boost to hit can get some real good threat extender.
Yep. Deppy.
Is Morgul 1 one of the best scorn casters?
When I saw Morgul 1 an original of Mark 3, I was like, man, he lost a lot of things. But then I looked at him a second time, like, man, he gained a lot of things.
And he changed a lot.
And I think you're like, because you first see him and go, man, lost the defense. Man, he lost overtake. Man, his feet doesn't cast casters anymore. Like, But then you're like, but he has steady. He's always steady. That's amazing.
Yeah,
that was one of the big complaints with him. Was
high def caster than steady is amazing.
16 steady is phenomenal. He has
it's better than 17 not steady
with dodge.
Yeah,
that's ridiculous. He got sidestep, which is different, but I think it can be good. I think it's just different. I think it's not bad or good. It's an equal change. And because there's so many more warjacks and beasts, his feat is even better. Sure, and it never affected warlocks. It only affected warcasters anyway. So, and warcasters usually aren't that far. So his feat's amazing.
Yeah,
his spells is still amazing. Admonition's still amazing. Abuse is still amazing.
Admonition's fantastic.
He's amazing.
Okay, I will bring diplomacy to War Machine Weekend if I go. And then Tort wanted to know if I had enough time to start hating Star Trek yet. New Trek, the first movie was amazing. The second movie was an abomination. The third movie was good and fun.
Second movie was a solid B+.
Solid B+.
Which is terrible. It was my lowest score, a B+.
So I don't know if this is actually on the girls podcast, but the girls were talking about one of the movies they went to go see, which was The Suicide Squad.
Ooh.
And she gave it a B-. And I said, what is your scale? Is your scale from A+ to B-? Is that is that your scale? Is that how that works?
I've seen it too. I'll give it a B-.
Minus. I think Nathan
all the minuses. Minus.
I think Nathan and I are going to go see that on Tuesday.
I'm
going to go pain train it.
It's interesting because when someone goes, man, I saw Suicide Squad. It was great. I'm like, oh, another person.
Unfriend?
No, I'm like, okay, I just put a little bit. Another person that I never have to listen to what they say. They can tell me what they want. No, it's irrelevant. If someone says, you know what I will say? It's better than Batman versus Superman.
You know what's great?
That's not hard.
You know how you say you love truck nuts because you can just know at a glance that that's a terrible person. You don't want to interact with them. At the fair, like occasionally I'd be walking and the person in front of me would have a Trump shirt on.
Yeah.
And be like, oh, they're racist. And then I would just walk in a different direction. It was super convenient.
Yeah, it helps. It's just, you know, it's easy to find. Anyway, are we ready for Twitters here?
Yeah. Zoom through them.
We need to go through them quick.
Zoom.
Most disgusting thing you never. The most disgusting thing you wish you never ate, and a story. You're not going to get a story. So worst thing you ever ate.
Mayonnaise.
Fuck you. It's so good. I would freebase mayonnaise. I accidentally drank some of Raylene's sweet tea once. Fucking tea. Why tea?
Sweet tea is anyway. Okay. So mayonnaise, tea, black olives for me. One of the worst things I've ever experienced.
Falafel.
Okay.
Awful falafel.
Oh my god.
Is what it is.
Do you like Euros?
Zappity grumble.
All right. Why are Rhydonons and Arcanons garbage? How can it be fixed? Not enough time. I think Arcanons aren't necessarily garbage. Rhydonons are overpriced. The problem is you make them cheaper, then you spam them, and now they're good, which is dumb. I'd say make them not. What they do should be like 3 points less, but then now I take 20 of them, and now suddenly it's ridiculous. I think the Rhydonon needs to be like readdressed as a life situation. I think they need to reevaluate it. But anyway, I don't have
put them back in the Pokeball.
I love Scorn. That's probably one of the three models in Scorn. I'm like, what? Why? What? Okay, next one. Scariest living thing and why?
The Bobbit Worm.
The Brown Recluse Spider.
Ooh.
Black olives.
They're technically dead.
I don't know. That's what I see. They kind of anyway.
The dreaded Kanjiro.
Andy? We don't have time for whys, because...
Just Google the Bobbit Worm.
Yeah.
All right. Richard Moore asks, should I buy all the Helmholtz to prevent Legion from players from using them?
Sure.
I already own my two, so yes.
They'll just make more.
Yeah.
By the way, on the topic of the Hellmouth, I knew it was going to be amazing and stupid and broken.
Katie, scariest living thing.
Tort might win. Katie might be the scariest living thing. So anyway, I knew that the Hellmouth was going to be stupid and broken and amazing, and I was going to have to own two because I played Legion. And then I watched Jake win Masters almost entirely. Like, he's a good player. I'm not trying to take away from that. But he beat Chuck pretty much entirely off the use of a single six-point fucking model. Like, if you watch the Masters final...
It's not a single 6-point model.
It's a unit, but he just
it's a four man unit for 6 points.
Okay, it started each turn with just it.
Oh my god, we have
it put
minutes.
A tentacle into play, and then he proceeded to win game. So it was just a model at the start of each of his turns.
But that model wasn't 6 points; it was a point.
It was a. I also watched the same game. That Hellmouth did make. I don't know if it was as crazy as Jeremy is going to say, but it definitely made a big impact. I will go as far as to say that model made its presence felt.
Like every Legion list will probably just be 12 points down. Like, it's that good.
Jake argues there are lists where you just take one.
Okay. At least six, but maybe
yes.
12.
Yeah.
70.
And that's all our Zeppi, so we can go right to recommendations.
Good.
Huzzay.
Make recommendations quick, because we have, like, 10 minutes.
That won't take me that long.
Okay. I recommend the new Ghostbusters movie. The new Ghostbusters movie was actually legitimately good, and you should still see it while you have a chance to see it in theaters and give it money, because hopefully they'll make a sequel, because I thought it was really well done. I laughed for most of it, and there was one part where I was laughing so hard I could barely breathe.
So just Chris Helmuth, I'm going to ask you a spoiler question, because it's not going to impact if I see it or not. So when Chris Helmuth, when he gets possessed, does he stay the bad guy for the rest of the film, or is that just a part of the movie?
He stay like there's only like 10 more minutes, and he's the bad guy for like 8 of it. Okay. I mean, it's not a lot.
Okay.
It's not a lot. But he's super good. Two complaints. It was very obvious what was supposed to be 3D because it would just come towards the screen, and that always annoys the shit out of me.
It drives me nuts.
And then in the final climax, there was like a pointless 5-minute fight scene that only existed to have shit fly at the screen. But the other 85 minutes were all comedy that were fucking hilarious. But my actual recommendation is if you have a PS4 and you're too poor to buy No Man's Sky and you like Sid Meier's Pirates back in the day when you played it on your PC or your iPad, there's a free version of Sid Meier's Pirates in space that's called Rebel Galaxy, and it's literally exactly Sid Meier's Pirates, but without the dancing and the sword fighting and in space. And it's free on PlayStation Plus, and I've been playing it every hour of the last 5 days.
It was weird, because when I would fly from planet to planet, it really felt like I was flying a boat, even though I was in space.
Fight by turning and broadsiding at each other, like the ships actually shoot by broadsides. You go to places and buy goods and steal goods and take them to other stores, and the commodities go up and down. And it's literally Sid. Like, I played for like half hour, and I'm like, yeah, that's from Pirates. Okay, nope, that's from Pirates. Like, every new mechanic was just a ripoff of Sid Meier's Pirates. But it's free if you have PlayStation Plus, and it's Sid Meier's Pirates in Space, and what's better than Sid Meier's Pirates in Space?
Good recommendation. So. My recommendation is, suck it. My recommendation...
Okay. No.
Thank you, Jeremy.
No.
My recommendation is a TV show that sadly got canceled, which is called Limitless. I've been watching it. I haven't finished it yet. It's amazing. And
the movie sucked.
eventually not amazing enough. So.
Well, no. It was the highest rated show. On CBS.
It was canceled, and then they canceled because it. They didn't get 100% of the profits because it was how the rights worked.
Oh, so that's almost exactly how Longmire worked then.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Okay, that sucks.
So anyway, and of the episodes I've seen, all of which are amazing, all of which I enjoyed, I will say that the first episode or two, the character that he meets that's the FBI agent is a little not a great character, but she develops. And the best episode ever is the one where they do Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Yeah.
Oh my God, Ferris Bueller's Day Off episode's amazing.
I'm not going to recommend it, but I'm going to say it's a great show. And people should.
It's on Netflix right now.
Yes.
Okay, so it might actually be picked up by. Have you looked into it?
There was discussions, but so far nothing's happened.
So far, okay. Yeah.
That sucks.
Probably because whoever picks it up will have the same, not 100% the profits bullshit that whatever CBS went through.
But Netflix doesn't care about that generally.
Yeah, Netflix could make it.
That's true, yeah.
Because that's what happened to Longmire. Longmire was like the top rated show for A&E and then got canceled. And then that's on.
I don't know that. So people,
we all know you hate Mark III. You don't have to talk shit about it some more. So we can go.
People are saying that the show is way better than the movie. I really enjoyed the movie.
Yeah, but you're dumb.
Well, okay, but I really enjoyed the movie.
The main actor, the dynamic of the main character and his interaction with some of the side cast is just so good in that movie.
Yeah.
TV show.
In the TV show, yeah.
Andy,
oh, you're saving Brian for last.
I don't know. I'm just going clockwise.
Well, we can go crazy.
Whatever.
Okay. I have two recommendations. First recommendation is minor. Someone really needs to explain how I'm supposed to play No Man's Sky because I'm doing something wrong. So help
you have it?
I have it. I don't.
I need to come over to your house because I want to see it.
Well, I have a stereo.
I'm going to go get it after this.
I just don't get it. You have to. There's ways of upgrading. Like you can only carry so many things when you start off. You can carry like four things. And I get that's a challenge part, but then you have to go sell things. And then half the things you pick up, you have to use to like fuel. You have to like use for fuel. You have to use for your suits. You have to re-energize stuff. So half your slots are going just to keep yourself alive. But then you have to find something, go sell it, but you don't know the value of anything. So you have to go, you grab a bunch of stuff. You grab two things, you're full. So you go sell the two things. Well, you only got a couple bucks because it's two fucking things. Then you run back to a planet, and then you've used all your resources to get you back and forth in fuel. So now you spend 20 hours getting your fuel back up.
That's gameplay.
But there's some way of like being able to increase your suits and increase your storage. I have no fucking clue how that actually works, but it gets confusing.
I can talk to you about it.
It seems neat. It's also, you play a game, it's like, it's just, anyway, that's for someone help me. second recommendation that I have on. If you like depressing shows that are fun, you should.
Question mark?
I like depressing shows that are fun.
You should watch Shameless. I'm only watching the American version. I haven't watched the British version. I'm sure it's good. Mm. There are six full seasons out. Four seasons are on Netflix. I'm actually watching the fifth season on Showtime via Amazon Prime. But it's about a poor family in Chicago. William H. Macy plays a father. He's a drunk. He's a terrible person. The show is about a terrible, poor family with a lot of terrible family. Some of the people are genuinely fun and interesting, but terrible things happen for 12 episodes. Then that season's over. Then another season. Then 12 episodes of terrible things happening to them. It's like watching a poor family get punched in the face every episode. But the occasional hilariousness mixed it. It's a really weird show. And sometimes I'm like, why am I watching this show? It depresses me. Like, I feel like I'm more depressed as a person because I watch this show. But it's compelling. It's like BoJack.
That is the worst recommendation I've ever heard. I've been on this episode of this podcast before.
It's just no different than BoJack Horseman. BoJack Horseman is a exceptionally depressing show that yet is somehow compelling because it has very interesting characters. But the show is depressing. Nothing good happens. Everything will end up bad.
Yeah.
And you keep watching it, and you know it's never going to get better. But yet you keep watching it because I don't know. I don't know. But
is that really a thing?
Yeah.
No, not your recommendation.
Yes, the fact that there's a third season of Todd Margaret on
it's
Netflix.
Like a flat. It's either an alternate timeline or it's in the past. I forget what it is. It's a weird.
Have you seen it already?
I've read reviews of it. It's very weird.
The comment was there's a third season of Todd Margaret on Netflix.
Correct. Yeah. I don't know if I've heard good things about it, but I've heard weird things about it.
I might have to watch it.
It came out like a year ago, but now it's on Netflix.
Oh,
so those are my two recommendations. If you like terrible things but that are compelling and well acted, because it's very well acted.
Well, William H. Macy's always.
And there's some pretty girls that get naked in it, so if that helps.
Yeah, it's the adventures of Emmy Rossum's boobs.
But it's also, it's just the characters are very interesting. But anyway, that's all I got.
You see butts and stuff too. Like everybody gets naked. It's equal opportunity.
I mean, there are moments where I just crack out laughing uncontrollably at this show. Because I mean, just like BoJack, there are just hilarious moments. But then, like, oh, then the baby accidentally took a bunch of crack, and now it's terrible, and now people are in jail, and oh my god, the child has brain damage. You know, all sorts of things. I mean, it's just
like people get shot from like gas station robberies.
Yeah, it's just abysmal. But
there's funny stuff.
Yes. That's my quote-unquote recommendations.
Somebody in the chat mentioned Black Mirror. I think that's the most overrated British TV show I've seen in a long time.
Wow. Boom. Mm-hmm. I've not seen it.
Wow.
It's like the British Twilight Zone. Like, every episode's the only thing. And they were okay, but, like, everyone's like, oh, it's the new future of sci-fi. And, like, meh. It was okay.
So, I don't have a recommendation.
Of course you don't.
I don't. But I just wanted to take this time to thank all of our listeners who come up to us during conventions.
Oh, yeah.
And say, you know, hey, you listen to the show. And my first recommendation
is to do that.
Well, yeah. I mean, yeah, if you want to come up and say hi to us.
But invitation more than a recommendation.
But it's more of just thanking all the people who actually listen to the show and take their time to come out and say hi to us. I think that's really cool. It's... I may not recognize you all the time, but...
I probably got that guy's name wrong.
Correct. I said it was Mike. He was really nice. It's just... I'm terrible.
But it's really cool. It means a lot to at least for me, is hearing people come up and say
hi. I really enjoy... fans used to come up to me more often. I think the fact that I'm not on the air every week like I used to be, my voice... while it carries across a convention hall, is less recognizable for whatever reason.
Well, you've been traveling a bit less, too.
And I've been traveling less. But I think I'm going to start traveling more, and I'm going to start being on the podcast more. I got really burned out at the end of Mark 2, and I'm not trying to like say that it was a dumb game. I was just really burned out on it, and Mark 3 has invigorated me again. So,
Tort mentioned that in Black Mirror, the Prime Minister fucks a pig. That's what I'm saying. It's like, I want my sci-fi to at least be believable. What kind of world would we live in where the British Prime Minister had sex with a living pig? In our world, he only sexually assaults dead pigs. And that's far more believable.
All right. But anyway, yeah. Thanks. Thanks to our listeners.
Yeah. Well, that was touching and sweet. Aww. I'm going to go cry a little bit. Fuck right. you, Travis.
Yeah, no, I feel that's better. Like, God, like, it seems weird to have to say this, but, like we're not, like, celebrities. Like,
no.
Come up and say hi. Like, if you do, like, if you're at Gen Con or War Machine Weekend or Adepticon, and if you hear our voices, and if you actually are a fan of the show, like, we're not Johnny Depp here.
No.
You're not the paparazzi, and we don't have bodyguards. Just come up and say hi. Play a game. We're normal people. Just because Andy shelled out some money for some microphones doesn't mean we're above you. Just come and say hi. Seriously. That's how Keith Coates became a friend. Come tell me
in person I'm an idiot. I enjoy that.
The other podcasts might be above you, but we're not.
Well.
Yeah.
We'll end it on that.
Well, they just think they're above you.
Whoa.
Whoa.
Bazinga.
Whoa.
Bojangles.